This episode is brought to you by Amazon Video Games. Visit bit.ly/Amazon Backlog Battle, all one word, when you buy anything from Amazon so we can continue offering our back catalog of shows.
This is the Backlog Battle Podcast, episode 174.
We 3 2017.
Everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Backlog Battle Podcast. This is Alex.
And this is Anthony.
Hello, sir.
How are you?
Pretty good. It is E3 2017 week. I am so stoked because this is the first time we actually dared to record an episode during E3 week that actually comes out during E3 week.
Yes, sir. We're doing it this year.
Yeah.
Unlike the last 2 years, we have an E3 show a month later.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just the way that it is, I suppose. But do you want to talk about, like, why we actually decided all of a sudden, like, hey, this week we're going to kind of make an exception to the rule?
Oh, well, we're setting up our vacation differently. We're still going to go on vacation, which for new listeners does not mean that you're not going to get episodes. We just pre-record. So there you go.
Yeah.
We're just pre-recording differently.
Yeah. And by that, we're talking about, like, we're pre-recording episodes that will still be meaningful for you guys. So it's not like, oh, we're talking about news from, like, many, many weeks ago or a month ago, like what Anthony said, you know?
Exactly. But I think we did do a pre-recording, like, last week's episode, the episode with our special guest, Xander, which was really good, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, and
was, you know, pre-recorded.
Yes, yeah. But just to kind of, you know, I keep cutting you off. Can you tell, like, we haven't done this in a while? Because, you know,
we haven't done this in a while.
Yeah. So if you guys haven't checked that out, we do urge you to kind of check that out. That was a really good conversation. And of course, all the other episodes. So I do want to kind of plug some things before we kind of start this conversation, because this we're just going to barrel on through. We're going to basically keep saying this until you guys are sick of us, you know, like, saying it. But mybacklogbattle.tv is live. So if you thought that you've listened to basically or downloaded to every single episode that we've ever done in our entire lives, podcast-wise, using, like, you know, like iTunes or, you know, Google, you know, Android and all that stuff, you're wrong, because there are plenty more episodes of the Backlog Battle podcast on the mybacklogbattle.tv website. So if you guys want to check out more of those and more of, you know, like, old school Alex and, you know, Anthony conversations, there's a ton of those, like, on the website right now, which I don't know about you, Anthony, but I've listened to several of the TPPPG episodes and stuff. They're not that bad. Your reaction makes it sound like it's terrible, but it's actually not bad.
Right. Well, just for those that don't know, Alex and I had done two podcasts before this one. Now, before you say, oh, you guys jumped from podcasts, well, this one we've been doing for 3 years, so shut up. There you go.
But,
and we're 174 episodes into this one?
Yeah.
So there you go.
Yeah.
The last ones, just for those that don't know, TPPG lasted from around April of 2009 to around November of 2009.
Right.
So there you go. And then the second podcast we did was 2 years before this one started. So that was in 2012, 5 years ago. So that one lasted from January 2012 to about July of 2012.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So there you go. There you go. Good, sir.
That's quite a lot of historical information. Can you tell, like, we're really, like, totally, like, not on our game right now?
No, we're not.
Yeah. So, especially you've been, You've been quite busy with things that are not video games, but let's not get into that right now. But
we won't get into a lot of that personal anyway, and we don't talk about personal things too much.
Sure. E3 though has been
talk about that.
Yeah, has been really, really fantastic. I mean, I don't know about you, but like, I felt that the importance of what E3 is has kind of like been ripped away from the press conferences and is now kind of given to pretty much like whoever is actually like covering the event. Because honestly, like, you know, I don't know if you feel this way, but the press conferences were all kind of shitty.
I agree.
Yeah.
I 100% agree. This E3 compared to especially the last 2 years was weak as shit.
Well, now, in terms of the press conferences, though, right?
The press conferences, yes. Because what do press conferences not cover? A lot of niche companies like NIS or Atlas or things like that. So people forget about that, right? Which I don't even know why Atlas is niche at this point after the gigantic beast that is Persona 5. But still, you know what I mean? But I will say this. There were some nice surprises, but not like the last couple years.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I will say, I watched that Sony press conference. Holy crap. It was just dry. It was very dry.
Yeah, it kind of reminded me of the Bethesda press conference, which actually happened the night before. And you know what's really sad about that was that Bethesda press conference was not even a press conference. It was just like, all right, hey, I'm Pete Hines, you know, CEO of Bethesda. Here's a bunch of trailers. And I'm like, honestly, like, I don't know about you, but, you know, if I needed a trailer for a game, I can just go to YouTube. I don't need to watch an event in order to figure out whether, you know, I should be excited about a game or not. And I feel like it kind of undermines, like, the importance of what a press conference really is, you know? And mind you, I'm talking about not just Bethesda, but also Sony. Like, yeah, cool, you got, like, some, you know, some live music at the beginning of the show and some, like, you know, some, you know, high-flying actors and stuff, like stunt people doing some of the things, like, for Days Gone, for example. But that's not why I watch those shows. I want to hear from the developers why they care about, you know, this game and really kind of, like, you know, get into the nitty-gritty of, like, the ideas behind certain decisions that they made when they're making the game, right? And I feel like, you know what's funny is that, I'm going to tell you this, I feel like Microsoft actually did a really good job actually doing exactly what I just said.
Yeah? Yeah? Well, let's look at it. You know, flashiness does not equate to good press conferences, right? Let's go back maybe almost a decade ago. I remember a press conference that Microsoft had, right? Where they had Rock Band Beatles. Remember that nonsense?
Mm-hmm.
And the press conference itself wasn't great, but oh, look, they had the two surviving Beatles plus the widows of the two dead ones.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's fine for music fans. And I'm sure there's a lot of gamers that are music fans, but that doesn't make a great E3 press conference, having the fucking Beatles or the survivors of the Beatles on the fucking stage.
So, okay, so let me throw the question at you then. What makes a good press conference for you?
I think surprises. I think a good amount of demos. I think it's okay to reiterate stuff that we've seen, right?
Mm-hmm.
But not to the point that Sony necessarily did. Now, I'm not saying Sony's press conference did not have a few surprises, but that's all that show was.
Mm-hmm. It's trailers.
I mean, it was just pure reiteration. We knew about Insomniac Spider-Man game, which looks great, mm-hmm. but it was just a reiteration, right? And it's, that's fine. Well, have those. You should have the God of War. You should have the Spider-Man reiterations, right? You should reiterate that, but you should also have a few fresh things that aren't just put into some sizzler montage of trailers. Okay, I think the biggest surprise they had was not presented the way it should have been. To me, that was Shadow Colossus remake. It was like shuffled in with like goddamn Marvel vs. Capcom Infinity Stones or whatever the fuck it's called. It was shuffled in with the new Monster Hunter. It was shuffled in with the, you know, like other trailers. You know what I mean? It should have given more time, I thought. And that's why I think, like, I talked to someone today, and I think if they would have made a little bit bigger deal, the impact of how I felt about it would have been bigger. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It was like, oh, here's a trailer for Shadow of Colossus. That's actually a pretty big deal for that remake. Mm. I'll be honest. That's a really big fucking deal.
Is it really? I think it is.
I think it is. But they didn't do it. That was the only real surprise Sony had. And hey, I'm a Sony guy. Alex and I are Sony guys. And that was it. Now, I'm not saying the reiterations were bad by any means. I mean, I'm really excited for God of War now from what I saw last night. I mean, God of War looks like it's going to do what Uncharted 4 did. Elevate the story to more character-driven levels. And I think that's what Sony is doing with a lot of its first-party games, is it's focusing on great gameplay and story. So there you go.
Yeah.
How do you feel about God of War?
God of War is going to be a good game, but kind of going back to what you're saying, though, I feel like, you know, saying that it's some of these are reiterations are kind of, you know, downplaying what actually was shown, which is more elaborations of what the gameplay
is. That's what
is.
I meant, elaborations. Okay. Which we don't, which, again, that's fine, because remember, how much of God of War did we see last year? Not a whole lot, right?
Mm-hmm.
We hardly saw anything for Spider-Man last year, right?
Oh, yeah, it was just a CG trailer. I mean, Allegedly that was all in-game, but now we really know that was all in-game.
Now, I think those games should rightfully have been presented, but there should have been some other stuff. I mean, where's that rumored Bloodborne sequel at? You know, stuff like that. You know,
well, I mean, I think as far as the Bloodborne sequel goes, I think people were just personally setting themselves up for disappointment at that point.
And, well, it's a rumor. You know, I don't take anything that E3 says. You know, there's a certain game that was announced that we'll talk about later, and another, I don't think it was exactly a press conference, but from another company that's been rumored for years, and it actually happened.
Mm-hmm.
And that company had the wow factor that Sony had through 2 years ago when they, you know, reiterated three games that were basically, one was a fucking fantasy, mm-hmm. another one was literally a fantasy, and the other one was vaporware. And what did they do? And this other company did that. But Sony didn't do it. And that's, I guess, you know what? You were right. I think with Sony, let's put it this way, it's tough to top the last 2 years. We can agree on that, right?
Right.
But they could have done a bit better.
Oh, yeah.
I agree. I'm sorry. I watched the Microsoft, and I'm still not sold. And I still, Microsoft is, to me, in my opinion, the weakest of all the console makers. And I'm just, that's my opinion. If you like Xbox, fine. But I'm just going to reiterate. I think they're still weak. I have no interest in a lot of their stuff. But I will have to say, stepping away from my personal feelings about Microsoft, they had the better press conference this year.
Right? Yeah. There is a lot of kind of, you know, like, yeah, like, you could say, like, okay, 90% of the audience were wearing, like, Microsoft shirts that says, like, we've witnessed the most powerful console in the world. That is until the next generation, of course, Anthony, because, you know, there's never such a thing that, you know, that's the worst, most powerful console. And, you know, like, but they brought the pomp and circumstance of E3 with them. Right. And I feel like, you know, them kind of showing the games and people talking about it. I mean, sure, there are misfires, right? Like, OK, like the guy who was doing esports commentary on some survival game that I have a notebook right here, by the way, Anthony, that has the names of every single game from every single press conference.
Oh, Jesus Christ. OK.
Personally, I don't believe in looking at that notebook. The reason why is because if it's an important enough game, I will remember the title, and I will remember, be able to tell you what it is, right? That's my thing. If it's made a lasting impression on me, yes, I will talk about it on this show. And that's how it's always been. As far as Microsoft's press conference goes, there was a lot of things to be hyped about. For example, the fact that, you know, PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds, which is that, you know, Battle Royale type game that I was telling you about like a few episodes ago, is actually going to be exclusive on console for the Xbox One. That's fantastic, right? That's huge news. A brand new Ori and the Blind Forest, which is called Ori and the Will of the Wisps, the sequel to Ori and the Blind Forest, that came out, which is awesome. And of course, the decision to basically debut BioWare's brand new IP, formerly known as Project Dylan, Anthem, onto the Microsoft stage. Like, they actually had surprises, and that's what you were looking for. And that's why I feel like what you were saying about, like, the press conference was actually really spot on, because Microsoft really delivered on that wow factor of, like, you know, some of these games might not be exclusive on our platform, but guess what? We have the games, and we have the exciting announcements to, you know, to get your blood boiling, you know?
Yeah, I agree with that. I can see that. They actually did right this year. I think the announcements were cool, but I still don't think they topped Sony from the last 2 years, of course. But let me finish. But that's even impossible for, well, I don't know about impossible, but that's even really difficult for Sony to do themselves. You know what I mean?
Yeah, this year.
So, I mean, to be fair. Yeah, they didn't do it this year, you know. If I felt the way that I did about the 2015 press conference and the 2016 press conference from Sony, as I did about Microsoft, then maybe I would consider an Xbox One. At this point, while Anthem is cool and that's a multi-platform game, you know, I'm still, you know, like, I'll just get on PS4 if I'm really interested in that game, because, you know, our feelings on BioWare, right?
Let's just jump right into that, because I feel like this is a great jumping point into Anthem, because for me, when I saw it, I was like, oh, that's where basically, like, Mass Effect Andromeda got all its cool, like, shooting and gameplay, right? I mean, do you feel that way?
Well, if you want to call it gameplay entirely cool, I don't know about that, but
I mean, come on, like, if you know, the thing is, here's the things that I will give, you know, Andromeda, you know, points for, right? The jumping mechanic and being able to actually float a little bit and actually, like, shoot targets and stuff or use your biotics, that's actually a really cool thing. Right.
Yeah, that didn't bother me.
Right. The running animations and stuff, like some of the mobility options that they have given you just to kind of feel like a badass in Mass Effect Andromeda were really cool. But now that we've seen Andromeda, like, we've seen Andromeda and played it, and now that we've seen Anthem, it's kind of like we're looking at it from, like, a different lens, and we're like, wait a second, Anthem has all those. So you mean to tell me, like, basically, like, what, like, Andromeda just kind of, like, you know, chomped at the bit for, like, something to new to give out? So, I mean, this is obviously positing, and obviously I didn't develop the game, I don't know, but it just seems to me that Anthem was kind of at the core of, like, all the hard work that Montreal was doing this whole time. You know what I'm saying? It's like,
and Andromeda was kind of a second tier title to them.
Right. I'm sorry. Montreal actually developed Andromeda. They've since been dissolved. I'm talking about Edmonton, which is the original creators of, you know, right, Mass Effect and, you know, Dragon Age. You know, this is their pet project. In fact, I don't know if you noticed, Anthony, but Anthem was actually, you know, literally the last project Casey Hudson actually touched and created before he moved on to Microsoft.
I did know that, yes.
Okay. But, like, you know, so, I mean, how do you feel about this game? From you know, what we talked about, BioWare and stuff, excitement factor, what do you think?
It's hard to say at this point. There's factors for it, but there's factors against it. I mean, I actually will go back and say I like Inquisition more than I did 4 years ago, 3 years ago when I first played it, 3-4 years ago.
Sure.
2 years ago. I should be more correct, about 2 years ago. And I do. I like Inquisition better than I did now. You know, it's interesting. Because if Andromeda did one thing, it made me like that game better, right?
Mm-hmm.
If Anthem is even in the same quality range of Inquisition, I'll get it.
Okay.
Because Inquisition did a lot of things right, in my opinion. There are flaws in that game, and we've reiterated it, so I'm not going to go into it. But if Anthem can take what Dragon Age Inquisition did right, and to me that's the character development, and I mean story character development, even the in-game character development, the gameplay, you know, the leveling up system.
Right. So that. Yeah.
And which again, I'll give that's one thing too that I can give Mass Effect Andromeda credit for too, is it has an excellent skill tree system.
Right.
And we can't disagree with that. We don't disagree on that. You know, take the presentation of Inquisition, which it's funny, a game released in 2014 has better presentation than a game released in 2017.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then just drop a lot of the excessive bullshit that, you know, I think BioWare's biggest problem, which is also evident in Inquisition and Andromeda, is excessive quests for the sake of busy work.
Okay. Well, I think we're kind of like getting a bit like kind of theory crafting on what it is.
Yeah. Well, no. Who cares? That's what this is for. What I'm saying is if they can make it even a cusp of the quality that Inquisition is, I'm fine with that. You know, go more Inquisition, less Andromeda.
I'm more curious about what you thought of what you saw than what it could be at this point.
Well, I thought the trailer looked cool. The, you know, looks like a mechanized war type thing.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't show a lot of gameplay, but I liked what I saw.
I mean, they have like the whole video is basically like, you know, a lot of people say like, oh, it's in game, but I'm like, I don't think so. I think if it is in game, it's mostly PC driven. But like, if that's gonna run like on a freaking PS4 and a Xbox One, well, okay. But you know, to me personally, what I saw, it didn't really impress me. Because again, like the reason why I'm making so many comparisons with Mass Effect Andromeda is it felt like Mass Effect Andromeda. Yes, you are in an exosuit, which is, you know, very different. And the thing is, mind you, Anthony, this is actually very, very interesting. There are multiple exosuits that you can equip. So which means, okay. And each exosuit has a different quote-unquote class. So it's almost like Final Fantasy XIV, where you're not locked in a specific role. You can actually be different roles depending on, like, the situation, where whether, I don't know, you might want to get a DPS, like, you know, exosuit or a tanking exosuit. We know it that much. But when they started diving into the world, you know, and the world just is basically there, which I'm like, all right, well, you can't have infinite jetpacking. That's going to be a gameplay mechanic, whether we like it or not, right? Like, there's no way that, you know, like, how would you control progression in a dungeon-like situation if you can just fly everywhere? You know what I'm saying?
I gotcha.
So there's that. They showed a bunch of, like, really cool and pretty things, but, like, all in the back of my head was, well, it's nice that it's announced. It's another, yet again, shared-world shooter. But how are you really, truly going to differentiate yourself from Destiny 2? Because now Bungie is going to try to fire on all cylinders in terms of the story. I mean, when Destiny 2 was revealed about a few weeks ago, they basically outright said, we have probably like the most meaningful, like, story-driven experience that you've ever had, like, in any of the Destinies before this. Mm-hmm. You know, we're talking like, you know, the whole premise of the story is that three of the main heroes of the game are splitting, you know, and going into three different, like, quadrants of the universe, and to try to find a solution to this problem on how they could retake back the, you know, like, the, you know, the light from, you know, and it's in, that's kind of like what I'm saying, is that there's already this kind of involved storyline. And I feel like, since even Anthem's not going to come out till fall 2018, it's almost like catching up to a rat race where Destiny is already like about to land in about 3 months from now. You know,
I am just going to wait and see what happens with bated breath. That's all I can say.
I'm even going to say further and say, like, look, you know, it has to be meaningful for me to be able to jump in. You know,
go ahead.
It's just, you know, again, I've already, you know, given BioWare so many chances. I've given them a chance with Dragon Age 2, given a chance with Inquisition, which, you know, I realized that, yeah, I went back to it, but then I stopped playing. There's a reason for that. Mass Effect Andromeda, which, you know, I enjoyed parts of it, but again, it's not a good Mass Effect game, like, in terms of how the original trilogy was. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And so Anthem, I want to believe that BioWare can still make competent RPGs that all of us can be involved in, especially a shared world shooter. But you're just going to say something?
But look at the world we live in RPG-wise right now. We live in a post-Persona 5 world. We live in a post-Witcher 3 world, right? We live in a even a post Final Fantasy 15 world to a degree, right?
Mm-hmm.
My point is that, you know, there's just, they have lowered themselves to the level that I used to consider Obsidian to be at.
Mm-hmm.
I hate to say that, but they're the new Obsidian.
Yeah, it's like they've switched places in a way. Like Obsidian is actually at the top of their game, and then they're just kind of keeping going down, 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 down.
I mean, Obsidian's had what, the South Park games and that one on PC from last year? What
the
was
one South Park game, mind you, because they're not making the sequel.
Oh, okay. What else are they working on?
Pillars of Eternity has been good.
Yeah, I knew that. But what else are they working on now?
They're working on a bunch of other stuff. Personally, like, okay. I don't follow Obsidian, so I'm pretty sure this week we're going to see a bunch more from them, but we'll see.
Yeah, but anyway, what I'm saying is that they're what, to me, BioWare is what Obsidian was. And this is bad. Obsidian, about a decade ago, was the poor man's lower grade BioWare game, right?
Mm-hmm.
And now the BioWare game is lower grade, and they are the redheaded stepchild to CD Projekt Red. You know, that just, you know, like, I'm more, you know, I know we haven't seen shit for Cyberpunk,
mm-hmm.
but I can guarantee you that I will probably buy Cyberpunk unless it looks really bad, but I'm pretty sure it won't because CD Projekt knows their shit.
Mm-hmm.
I will probably buy Cyberpunk, a game I haven't seen, over Anthem any day of the week of a game that I have seen.
Mm-hmm.
Because everything CD Projekt has done, including GOG, Good Old Games, which is their, you know, old school PC gaming website, has been just correct. And they've always treated their fans and consumers with the utmost of respect since The Witcher 1. And everything they've done. And I'm throwing GOG in there. I know that's not a game, but they have handled that website correctly as well.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go.
Cool. All right.
That's all I got
to
say.
Yeah. Well, that's all I really have to say about, like, Anthem as well. And, you know, it's sad that, you know, it's that's kind of like how we personally view Anthem. But I'm pretty sure some of you guys are, like, really excited about it. So we do want to hear from you. Email us at podcast@mybacklogbattle.tv. We'd love to hear your reactions to, like, not just Anthem, but also, like, all the other, you know, video games that we saw this week are going to be seeing, because heaven forbid it's Tuesday before we actually release this episode. God.
Oh, there's also our Facebook group that we have done. So you could even post your thoughts there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And everybody can actually, like, post, you know, like, their, you know, like, new threads there and stuff, asking people about suggestions and or even, like, you know, our reactions to it. Like, so far, it's been me, like, and several people and stuff, but we have a really active community who loves, you know, sharing their opinions. And, you know, again, like what Anthony said, if you search for the Backlog Battle podcast community, you're going to find us there. And, you know, it's a very open community, and, you know, we'd love to have you.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah. So, not much else to say about Microsoft, I would say.
Yeah. I think, like, you know, for me, you know, like, Microsoft did pretty good. Bethesda and Sony are just not up there for me. You know what also, you know, who also really messed up big time is EA. Because, I mean, they have esports there. Like, their whole focus thing was, like, esports and influencers. Now, have you watched the EA press conference?
Yeah, I couldn't sit through it.
Oh, my God. So, okay, so...
that says a lot, right?
One of the most, you know, and mind you, I don't have anything against friends who are Twitch streamers, or successful or otherwise, or, you know, other podcasters or content creators, successful or otherwise, right? But, oh, my God, like, this was the biggest flub in that entire fucking press conference. Did you manage to stick around when they were trying to introduce Need for Speed Payback?
No.
Oh, my God. So, okay, so they, after the whole, you know, Madden thing, they basically switch over to this influencer dude, this YouTuber guy who introduced himself as a YouTuber, and for about maybe 10 or 15 seconds, maybe I'm exaggerating, he completely forgot what game he was introducing. Like, literally, he was staring at the camera, and he's like, I am supposed to say something, but I've completely and totally forgot what I was supposed to say. And I was like,
oh, it's EA's room. Ridge Racer moment.
Yeah, it was pretty bad. Except it wasn't really, well, actually, it is EA's responsibility because it is their press conference. But, and thankfully, though, they managed to kind of save it. And I know you don't care about, you know, driving games, especially from EA, but the new Need for Speed Payback. And you know, and the thing is, like, to be clear to a lot of people out there, I got this information by actually watching gameplay of the game, interviews with the developers and stuff. I didn't know that the guy who is actually head of this game is the same dude responsible for Hot Pursuit 2 and Need for Speed Underground 1 and 2 for the PS2.
Oh, damn.
Some of the best ones that the series has ever made. Right. So, one of the things that he talks about was really cool, and again, this is not talking about like what they presented at the press conference, but just the fact that they wanted to bring back the action in driving, which, if you think about it, Anthony, by adding deliberate action, like, you know, explosions, Michael Bay stuff, whatever, or otherwise, you're already kind of separating yourself from Forza, from Gran Turismo, heck,
now
from
that's
Mario
a racer
Kart.
I can play a racer like that.
Yeah.
It's the Forzas and Gran Turismos, you know, the realistic simulations that I can fucking not play. If I wanted to drive, I'll go out and drive.
But that's the thing that's really cool about this. It brings back, you know, the burnoutness of, you know, these developers and kind of like, you know, thrusts it into the Need for Speed universe. Now they have an excuse to be like, all right, you can take down like all these, like, you know, cop cars, these SWAT cars as much as you can, because you really have to get away from them. So you have to kind of like do, you know, so what's one of the things that I really like that they talked about was that they didn't just want to be a racing game. They wanted to be something that has a lot of different activities, which again evokes very much Burnout, because there's not just racing at Burnout, right? And to really kind of create a variety of activities. Like, for example, it's almost, you know, like, if you remember in have you ever played Burnout, actually?
No, but I have a comparison, though.
Okay.
Midnight Club.
It's even more action-packed than that.
Yeah, well, you know, Midnight Club had a lot of activities for you to do, and I liked Midnight Club.
Right, but, like, I've played Midnight Club as well, but, like, I don't think that, you know, like, in terms of, like, adrenaline, it the activities there compared to Burnout. Because we're talking, like, when you play Burnout, it almost feels like you're, you know, like you are racing at breakneck speeds. We're talking like Mach 1, Mach 2 kind of speeds, even though you're just in a car that's going like 100, 200 miles an hour, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And that's kind of like what Burnout, you know, gave us. And what's really fascinating is that other than that, they have other modes too. Like, for example, Road Rage. And I'm talking about Burnout now, where your goal is you have like 9 other cars that you're kind of not really racing against, but your goal is to basically, like, you know, total them by knocking, you know, tapping them on the side and kind of making them and forcing them to crash, you know, and that's a fun activity. Nothing racing involved there. By the way, you just want to fucking knock somebody into, like, you know, an oncoming divider or another car. You know what I'm talking about?
Right.
And you think about that kind of exhilaration, like, none of the Need for Speeds really had that. Not even the previous one that I have. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You're right. Well, I don't think I'll buy it unless it's on sale, but, you know.
Mm-hmm. I don't know how I feel about it either, personally, because I was just really excited that they mentioned a lot of the things that I want to mention. Now, as you know, like, when people say things, it's probably like, you know, trying to appeal to what people like to hear. So I'm kind of holding off myself, because personally, we're not done even talking about some of the most amazing things that they've announced at the show. And, you know, like, Need for Speed, unfortunately, will just kind of have to take a back seat for me.
Yeah. EA probably had new Madden and crap like that.
But they have one very, very huge thing that I personally am, you know, probably going to buy like day one, because I believe in these people and I have played their previous game, which is Brothers: A Tale of Two Sons, which is a way out. And have you seen the trailers for this game?
Yeah, it looks cool.
Yeah.
Good indie game. Really good indie game.
Right.
Now, I have Brothers, and I haven't played it.
Mm-hmm.
My son beat it, though, I found out.
You should play it with your son. It's a short experience. I want to say it's akin to Journey, where you can kind of just spend an afternoon and play it, even with your son, and you'll feel something really, you know, like, intense once you finish that game. And now you, and then you'll understand like how, why I really feel this way about A Way Out. But the most interesting thing about like the gameplay trailer that you probably saw, which I probably saw as well, is that it's always split screen, right? You notice that?
Yeah.
So if you notice there, you know, sometimes the split screen actually grows to kind of highlight a cutscene, and sometimes it kind of ebbs and flows to kind of give importance to different people. And to me, that's kind of like a great visual technique to kind of like say like you're about to do something really, really important, or that you're in a cutscene, you know? And I think one of the most compelling things about this game, Anthony, is that this is purely a co-op game. There is absolutely no way that you can play the single player. Nothing. In fact, here's the thing too, and this is really ballsy. There is no online matchmaking for this game.
Oh.
Yeah. So you, if a friend is playing the game, that is the only way that you can play with them online. Or couch co-op. Those are the only two ways that you can do it. But it is
a risky move.
It is highly a risky move. And even the director said it. It is an extremely ballsy move. And he acknowledges it up, down, left, and right.
But you know what? I think I can understand why he did it, though.
Mm.
Because he wants the experience to be meaningful, right?
That, but also, like, one of the things that truly endeared me about the game is he said that both people actually have different stories. So even if you do play as one character, you know, like throughout the entire story, the other player might experience something completely different. So he kind of encourages you to kind of change roles, like once if you do beat the game, because and that's the thing that interests me a lot, is that both characters seem to be very, very different from each other. And I'm interested how that's going to interplay with how you solve some of the challenges in the game. Right. Like, let's say if you're, you know, like you need a character to confront a cop and convince him that these two guys are going to beat the shit out of each other. Are you going to pick your character, or maybe your second player co-op guy is his character that he plays is more convincing. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah,
it's really interesting if you think about it from that perspective. And no other, you know, co-op game to my knowledge has actually, you know, kind of thought about co-op games in this fashion. And that's the thing that, that's the thing that really like kind of sold me on the game.
A lot of the best co-op games even have had a single player mode, but they've encouraged it, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you look at stuff like Gears of War, the original, right? That whole thing. The original Gears of War, you know, which I co-opted, I never played it on a single player experience. Both times I beat it, it was co-op. It felt like a better experience, but you still had that option. You know what I mean?
Right.
You still had the option of motherfucking, and I can't think of the word. Wow. Single player.
Okay. Right?
Okay, we need single player.
Hey, Anthony.
What?
I think we need to do this more often.
What?
Like, record.
Podcasting?
Yeah, podcasting. Okay. Yeah. I just totally like threw you out the door. Oh my God.
We are fucked this week, folks.
We are
fucked.
Yeah, I think it's also partially because we're kind of excited. I'm trying to desperately figure out how we should talk about these games, but you know, anyways, so, please finish your point, because I think it's really important.
I think, you know, they've encouraged it, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think we've ever seen, you know, the possibility of just a co-op game by itself. Pure co-op.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like even going back to the Nintendo games, you know, yeah, play Contra with your buddy, cool, but you can just have as much fun by yourself, you know?
Right.
Or sometimes co-op could ruin the experience, i.e. Battletoads, remember? Punch mm-hmm. your partner in the face. But I don't think we've ever seen it where it's just pure co-op, and it's designed with, you know, the way you described it. And also what I meant earlier by it being more meaningful is, if you do a matchmaking system and you get some random guy who just like fuck off and be a dumbass about mm-hmm. it, then there's a problem. With the way it's set up, now you choose the people you want to play with, as opposed, or you get invited by Pete, or you know, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
The point I'm making is he is purely set on making this a meaningful experience, not ruined by the constraints, but the problems that happen in online gameplay. You know what mm-hmm. I mean?
Yeah.
You know, how many times have we played Gears of War 1 and we have an online, the server open, and some asshole just pops up and he's doesn't give a shit and he tries to collect everything.
Mm-hmm.
Same with like, what's that game? Gauntlet. You know, yeah. I play co-op with Gauntlet, you know, the new Gauntlet that came out. Love that game. Fantastic co-op game.
Mm-hmm.
But random assholes will drop in and try to take all your food and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I can see why he's doing this.
It's kind of funny because while you were talking, there was a video that popped into my head. It was part of the highlight reel series on Kotaku, which, you know, they collect a bunch of funny videos online. You did know that Star Trek Bridge Commander came out for the PSVR and PC, right?
Mm-mm.
Okay, so basically it's a VR game where you could basically like pilot, you know, your very own Enterprise with like, you know, three other people, right? In VR, which, you know, okay. It's pretty cool. Obviously, there's microphones, so you can communicate with other people and stuff. So, you know, imagine this scene where there's a table and there's like three Vulcans sitting there, and then there's you, right? And then there you're waiting for the third the fourth Vulcan to actually pop up. And basically they show up and you hear a little kid's voice. And he says, "Hey guys, I think I'm going to pilot the plane." And then the other two guys are like, "Well, fuck this." And they basically left and you see like the two Vulcans just disappear out of nowhere. I was like, oh man, I think that's pretty much like what you were describing.
Pretty much. That shit happens in co-op. Yeah. I mean, even Journey had some of those problems.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Even without communicate, they really tried to make it troll free. And they did a good job with mm-hmm. Journey. But there, you know, there are some people who just like fuck off on that game. So.
Right. Right. So, okay. So there's that game. But like, what else do you want to talk about? Because I know we're kind of like weaving in and out of press conferences and talking about games. But like, I know you have some stuff that you want to talk about.
Yes, 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 yes. Okay, so Bethesda, I don't, you know, the new Wolfenstein, I'll briefly talk about that. That's a budget game for me. But what I mean is when it drops down in price.
Oh, okay.
Price drop game. Just because it's, I like the first one, but but it just, I don't know. It just, I'm not feeling the Bethesda thing. You know what I mean?
Interesting.
So there's that.
I mean, to be quite honest, though, like, let's think about, like, what they showed, right? Like, okay, right. Skyrim on Switch. Okay, whatever. Another version of Skyrim, right? Wolfenstein, which, you know, it's, I was hoping to be more excited about that game. But I think, though, personally, and tell me if you agree with this, but there's something off-kilter about that trailer. You know, like, in the original Wolfenstein, there's a bit of a seriousness there, right? But then you get to 2, there's like these weird kind of vignettes that they kind of showed. It's kind of like, well, is that characteristic of a Wolfenstein game? Like, there's some funny bits here. Like, it's almost like they went out of character on purpose, you know?
Yeah, I don't know. That's why, like, I like that first one from, what was it, 2014, 2015? You know which one I'm talking about.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. I like that one, but I don't know. I just, Bethesda didn't do anything for me for the most part.
Okay.
Yay, Skyrim again on, you know. I just make an Elder Scrolls 6 for fuck's sakes. They probably are, but, you know, really.
They doubled down on, like, mods. They basically said, like, yeah, we're going to allow a lot more mods. And I'm like, of course you're going to do that because you're Bethesda.
I'm done with Skyrim.
You know, I feel like Bethesda, though, suffers the same problem that Sony had. Mm-hmm. You know, like, and not just, like, their press conference, but also their offerings, if you think about it. If you think about the past year of Bethesda, that's going to be really tough to top. Because we're talking about launching a brand new IP with Prey, rebooting the entire Doom franchise with Doom, and releasing, you know, a sequel to basically like one of the more successful games, which is Dishonored 2. Like, you cannot beat that year. Even they can't beat that year, you know?
Yeah, you can't. I mean, like, look at the year Sony's had. It's almost the same thing in a way, right?
Yeah. You're right. Because Neo is actually Sony published. I didn't know this. But Sony published Neo here.
You know what I just realized?
Hmm.
Some of the bigger Sony releases, we didn't really see a whole lot of.
What do you mean?
We didn't see it. Maybe I'm mistaken. I think we might have seen it, and maybe I wasn't paying attention. We didn't see Last of Us 2 last night, did we?
We did not.
We did not see Last of Us 2. We saw that other zombie game, which is just, I don't know. I'm not
Days
feeling
Gone.
That game at all. Yeah, I'm not feeling that.
I think Days Gone is it is curious how they're showing it. I feel that it's Time to Shine will be next year. And the reason why I say this is because they know that God of War is coming out sooner. And I mean, if you also notice, they didn't even release a date for Days Gone, you know? And it's conscious, I feel.
We'll see if something sways me. Right now, I'm not feeling that game at all.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just not feeling it, you know? So
I get you. I'm kind of the same way with you. But I feel like there are things to kind of take a look at in that game that would make, you know, would make anybody, get excited for it. Like I saw a lot of like really good sandboxy kind of solutions to certain problems, like stealth, you know, like the fact that he blew up that fence so that all those zombies would basically take over this like enemy encampment so that, you know, yeah. That's kind of like his stealth cover and stuff. Like, I think those are kind of clever, but I feel like really in terms of like when we're going to see this game, I think we're going to see one more E3 until we finally kind of, you know, say like, all right, well, you know, like we'll be able to make our determination whether or not we'll want this game by next E3. You know, but not sooner than that.
I get it. We'll see. But the sandboxy things I've seen done in other games, you know, and, you know, there's games I can do that now. It's just I'm just not feeling it. And I don't know if I'll feel like I feel. I think one of the big problems that I have is let's take a look at The Last of Us. Last of Us is essentially a zombie game. But at least they mixed it up, in my opinion, with The Last of Us, right?
Mm-hmm.
With the creatures. These are just generic zombies. Yeah, there's a zombie bear, big whoop-de-doo, but these are just zombies.
Yeah, let's put it this way, though. They haven't been really good at showing the variances in zombies because they do talk about them during interviews. That's bad. That's bad because, when you said that, oh, they only have just generic zombies and then a bear, that's not entirely true according to what I've heard. And that's bad because that's all you saw. That's what the trailers are. Right?
Yeah.
You know, and again, like, if that's all you saw, then how are you gonna, you know, how are you expected to kind of form a more, like, advanced opinion of, like, oh, yeah, I should get this? And frankly, I don't know if this is gonna be a day one purchase for me, still. Because there are still so many things that I don't feel, you know, kind of, you know, are coalescing. You know what I'm saying? Like, kind of merging together. Like, the storytelling, where is that going to be? The sandbox type and, you know, environments. Like, it's there's too many different modular things that with nothing gluing them together, right?
Yeah.
And that's kind of like how I look at games sometimes. It's like, all right, well, if the individual parts are good, what's really the glue that's holding this together? And I haven't seen that yet in Days Gone.
And this is my opinion, but I think that game got a little too much time. I think there were other games that should have gotten a bit more time. I'll be honest with you. I think, you know, like, what do we have coming out? We have Ni No Kuni 2, you know, with kind of the resurgence in JRPGs. Where was that? You know what I mean? It seemed like, and it's not just that, Alex. It seemed like Sony made some really bizarre choices with their press conference. Not only that, and I mean, that's probably more of a niche thing, but where the fuck was Last of Us 2?
Well, you know, I mean, they said,
and I know the argument is going to be, oh, it's, you know, not further down in development, but I'm kind of getting tired of that argument. You know why? Don't show me the game until it's ready. And that argument applies to a lot of things, especially Final Fantasy VII Remake. You know what I mean?
To be fair, so, Bethesda did do exactly what you did with Wolfenstein.
What do you mean?
Well, Wolfenstein is coming out in October, and they showed it for the first time this week.
And that's great. I applaud them for that. I'll give credit where credit's due. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I applaud that. You know, I'll give credit for, you know, let's, speaking of Skyrim, people forget back at the 2010 Spike Awards or whatever, Video Game Awards, they announced Skyrim for the first time and said it's coming out in like the fall of 2011. Same thing with Fallout 4. So Bethesda, they're pretty good at that. Mm-hmm. I'll give them credit. Okay. I remember we first saw Fallout 4 E3 2015, and it came out a few months later.
Mm-hmm.
So they're good about that, you know? I just wish more companies would do that. Maybe not that short of a time frame, maybe at least a year. But still, you know, that's just how I feel about that.
I think, like, your opinion, though, is echoed by a lot of people. Because last year, the joke was that Sony is showing games that you can't even play, like, this year. You know? And, it, you know, going back to the Microsoft press conference, Microsoft said that, you know, most... Or actually, no, Bethesda said this in their press conference. They said, like, all the games we're showing you today are playable this year. And that's not, you know, and that's quite a definitive statement, right? To say, like, yeah, all these games, we're not just blowing smoke up your ass. It's all coming out this year. And that's fantastic.
You know what? You know what? The other company that did that for the most part, who's the winner of E3, and I'll just say it now because I'm tired of, you know, stepping along eggshells, was Nintendo. You know, most of the games, not all of them, but a lot of them, they confirmed are coming out this year, right?
Well, or at least they have some sort of release window, right? Like,
yeah.
I think that's also the thing that irks me about, like, the PlayStation press conference was, okay, it's lazy, right? Like, it's all trailers. Like, you could basically, like right now on the Backlog Battle YouTube channel, which is youtube.com/mybacklogbattle. Go check it out. I could make a playlist of all the trailers and boom. By the way, Anthony, I just have, like, the entire Sony press conference in a goddamn playlist on YouTube.
Oh, shit.
That's what it really is, though. I mean, wouldn't you agree? That's what it was. A fucking YouTube playlist.
Pretty much it was, with just, like, some drummers
yeah.
put around. And you know what? This new, that Sean guy, he seemed bland compared to Tretton.
I mean, Sean has been pretty good over the past 2 years. Like, don't take that away from him. I think it's just again the way that they decided to present it this year. It's like, why even have somebody of import on stage if you're just gonna basically waste our time and play fucking trailers? Like, imagine all those people, like, who stayed up for the Bethesda press conference at 12 midnight, Anthony. And they showed fucking trailers for almost an hour, and that was it. That's fucking insulting. You know? And again, like, I'm not happy with, like, the press conferences at all. Like, now, there are ones that I really, really liked. And here's the thing, too. When we're talking about the Nintendo press conference, which is the Direct, this is going to be a slippery slope, because what happens with those typically is they directly lead into the Treehouse stuff. But
right.
Here's the thing that's different about that. And I feel like this is kind of like, you know, and tell me if I'm wrong here, Anthony, but I feel like what's happening is that the press conferences in general are becoming teasers to what you should be looking out for throughout the week from other publications or even the companies themselves.
Yeah, you're right, because one thing that happened over the last 2 years is we got pretty big announcements that were days after the press conferences.
Yeah. Or before that, actually. More so before.
So we may be talking a little bit of E3 in our next episode.
Yeah.
Don't be surprised about that. But
yeah.
But you know what? Fuck it. You know, I'll agree. Most of these press conferences were weak. I do want to talk about two Sony things, but I really want to talk about Nintendo.
Yeah, let's do it.
But let's talk about the two Sony things, okay?
Okay.
That I want to talk about. I'm not going to talk about Monster Hunter because you and I are not fans of it. So if you are a fan, tell us why. Send us an email at where?
podcast@mybacklogbattle.tv.
Tell us why we should give Monster Hunter World a chance. Although, I will tell you something I noticed. That dinosaur got glitchy a few times.
I didn't even see that. I believe you.
Yeah, it looked glitchy. You know, the Marvel vs. Capcom thing, it looks weak. That story mode.
I was gonna say, like, play the demo at least. I played the demo a little bit. I let's put it this way, I pulled my reservation for the game and moved it to Destiny 2, so that should say a lot about that. But
And there's probably a better superhero fighting game out there now. And I'm not just saying that biasly.
I don't actually agree with that, because I think what people are actually really excited about is actually the new Dragon Ball fighting game from Arc System Works.
Oh.
Yeah.
No, yeah, but that's anime. I'm talking about American superheroes.
I don't think that actually counts here, because the thing is, like, you know, we're talking about the actual core gameplay, and it's funny because Anthony always says that I don't care about the gameplay, but Marvel vs. Capcom Infinite is comparable to the gameplay of that Dragon Ball fighting game. In fact, it's actually probably the better, like versus style fighting game of the two. That's why a lot of, like, you know, and this is just, you know, again, talking with people from the fighting game community, talking to friends and stuff, like, they're more excited now on what they saw of the Dragon Ball fighting game than they are with Marvel vs. Capcom Infinite, which to me is really sad, but... Yeah, you know, it is what it is.
It is what it is.
Yeah,
it
is. Have you seen the trailer for that Dragon Ball fighting game?
Yeah, it looks okay. It looks pretty good.
Yeah, dude, like, it's using the same fucking engine as Guilty Gear, and it has 3v3 tag gameplay, and it has features that Marvel vs. Capcom Infinite don't have anymore, like assists. Like,
ooh,
that.
Okay.
Yeah, when basically, like, they revealed that, like, you know, people, like, just blew up. Like, Marvel vs. Capcom players in the FGC are like, wow, this is probably the Marvel vs. Capcom game we've been making, and it's a fucking Dragon Ball game. Think about that. Yeah.
Yeah. All right, so let's move on. There's that Shadow Colossus remake, which we touched on. It looks good.
It looks good, but I have a point of contention about this. They've already remade this game.
They did. You have a point. Yes, they did.
And by you, it's being remade by the same fucking company. How many remakes of Shadow of the Colossus do we really need?
Maybe this should be the last one.
I'm not even excited about this. I mean, I have two versions of the game. This is almost like Nintendo levels of absurdity, like, in terms of, like, re-releasing games. Like, I mean, I know Sony wants to be Nintendo, but why this game?
Well, like, let's be fair. It's also Bethesda levels of absurdity at this point, too.
So. Well, yeah, because it's Skyrim. Yeah, tell me about it.
So there's that.
Yeah.
But the big one was God of War for me. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I think the biggest thing that Sony did was it really sold me onto that game, because I believe it's doing what Uncharted 4 did to Uncharted. It's giving that game more of an emotional hook than it ever had. And that's what Uncharted 4 did. And I think God of War is doing that with the whole storyline with the sun and things like that. And man, it looks cool as shit. I am really excited for this game. Kratos fighting Norse mythology, you know, mythological gods. You can't go wrong there.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I'm really excited for this game. I'll be honest. I am pumped for God of War.
Mm-hmm.
And I have not been the biggest God of War fan, but I don't know. This one looks really special to me.
Right.
And I've played all of them, just for people that don't know. And they've always been more of like, yeah, they're fun games and they have cool set pieces, kind of the way, like, I brushed off a Call of Duty game. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But this one just looks special.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how you feel about this new one.
Okay, finally. I've been waiting for you to throw the ball back and forth with me, like, this all episode, Anthony.
Well, I was. That was my point. Tell me how you feel.
Okay, yeah. Okay, so I don't know if you guys know about this, but I have a big man crush on Corey Barlog, who is the director of this game, mainly because I feel like of all the directors of God of War, he made my favorite one. And I don't know if you also know this, but he also had a hand on, you know, a little bit of a hand on the Mad Max remake that was released in the movie theaters. Did you know that?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So,
no, I didn't know that. The Mad Max, you mean the movie from 2 years ago?
I guess 2 years ago, man.
That's not a remake. That's a direct sequel.
Okay, well, I haven't even seen it, so there you go.
It's amazing. You should see it.
This is how much I know about the series. But in any case...
Well, you should watch it. Okay, good. Watch Mad Max Fury Road.
But my heart almost, like, dropped to the floor when I started working out today, and I got to the gym, and I looked at my tweets, and I kept mentioning Gory Barlog's name, because he had actually, during the time, he was actually talking with, you know, with Shannon Studstill from Sony Santa Monica on Jeff Keighley's E3 Coliseum show, talking about the God of War game. And, you know, and I was just saying, like, look, man, you know, I'm a big fan of yours. You know, like, I knew, like, I was really super ecstatic when I heard that you were back in Sony Santa Monica working on this new God of War and stuff like that. And then he basically, like, just replied to me and put a heart. And I know that's, like, the most ridiculous fucking thing ever to be, like, fanboyish about. But the fact that he actually, like, liked all my comments and then, like, replied, I was like, oh, okay, that's really cool. But
hey, the creator of Street Fighter, tweeted me back a long time ago, so there you go.
Yeah, there you go. And also Sony Santa Monica kept on retweeting some of my shit too. I was like, really weird. You know, name dropping aside, and here's the thing that I've always felt about, you know, like a lot of content creators just like us, right? It's been a long time since God of War 2 was made. I mean, that was talking about like two generations ago, right? And, you know, and
it was a decade ago it was released.
Right. And, you know, if you think about it, you know, the director, Corey Barlog, like when God of War 2 was released, and he said this in the interview, he's a much different person back then than he is now. In his words, he's a bigger asshole now than he was back then. Right. So I thought that was pretty funny because that reminded me of you. Anyway.
Oh, okay. That's good. I agree with those sentiments.
But, you know, but more importantly, though, he became a parent. And when he started, even last year, when he started talking about being a parent and actually the challenges involved in that and feeling that he had more stories to tell with Kratos, I felt that the vision, even last year, I told you this, that the vision for God of War was really, really good. You know, the right. fact that, you know, like you said, injecting that humanity that they added in Uncharted 4 into Kratos and stuff is real challenge now is like it's bringing a different it's allowing us to see a different side of Kratos that is more than just kill, 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 kill. You know, it's like if, you know, heaven forbid, if NetherRealm reboots Mortal Kombat once again, but made a lot of the characters more sympathetic.
Oh, those characters are the least sympathetic characters in any video game.
Imagine if
all
like,
of them.
Yeah.
Even the good guys, they're fucking ruthless.
They're all assholes.
Yeah, they all are.
Yeah.
They all are.
But that's kind of like what they did, though, with God of War. And one of the things that I learned from today's interview, they said that Corey actually fought for the new kind of camera that's, you know, that is featured in the new God of War, which is more intimate, you know, like a lot closer over the shoulder, right? As opposed to like the third person camera. And it's funny because he made like a like anecdote and said like, yeah, I was talking to one of the guys and stuff. And he said like, yeah, this can't happen. And then he said like, well, I was going to spite him and actually make a shirt that says like, there's no camera cutaways and it's going to be this. And I'm like, man, that's dedication. But as you know, like some of the more maniacal people sometimes have like the craziest ideas. And going back to what you said, I know this is like a weird tangent of it because I really like Corey Barlog's ideas from a creative standpoint. Making the action closer, more intimate, kind of reminds me of the first time we played Gears, right? How that camera actually served that genre really, really well. Another game that was served really well because of this camera angle, Resident Evil 4, right? Like there's some tension and even because we are always Kratos in this game, we see scale much more than we've ever had in any in any God of War ever. Right? Like,
right.
Because now we have to look up at the enemies that we're facing and marvel at how bigger they are compared to us. I mean, that's a big fucking deal. More importantly, and this is something that you'll really love, they took cues from, like, the Dark Souls series, you know, the Battleborn series and stuff, and just that kind of character action kind of game, and that's, right. And they wanted to bring that into God of War, and I felt like just the marriage of those two is just absolutely calculated and absolutely spectacular. So I'm with you that I'm really excited about God of War, especially, of course, since Corey Barlog is in it. But more importantly, I want to call this out right now. I called it early 2018.
You did?
Yeah. So
you did?
It's probably going to be March. Hopefully it's February, kind of like Horizon, because that seems to be a magic date. But yeah, that... Man, next, you know what's funny? The first quarter, again, of the following year is turning out to be an amazing year. An amazing
Jesus.
Start. Yeah, it's like, holiday season? What's that? Oh, look at all these games. Far Cry 5 and, you know, like the God of War game. And I'm like, what's going on? What happened to the holiday season?
I don't know, man.
Yeah, there's nothing that I want in the holiday season, really.
Ni No Kuni 2 and a Nintendo game, which we'll talk about in a moment. Well, yeah. We'll talk about it now.
Yeah.
Actually.
Why not?
Yeah. So I am buying my Switch in August. Because, let's be honest. I don't care if they didn't have a press conference or not, but Nintendo, and I hate when people hate this term, but I'm going to say it. Nintendo did what Sony did 2 years ago.
Yeah. They killed it. And I mean,
killed it.
I'm and even saying this with you. I'm even saying this with you. This is
I know you are.
This is crazy, right? Like it's like hell froze over. I mean, there's more about the Nintendo press conference that made hell freeze over, but let's not get to that yet.
I know they did projects. They announced projects. Sony, okay, 2 years ago, for those that may not remember, Sony announced two projects that were just a dream for people, right?
Mm-hmm.
It might be vaporware at this point, though, to be honest. But the Final Fantasy VII Remake and Shenmue 3, remember?
Well, Shenmue 3 has a mid-2018 release date. So they pushed it back, but, you know, Final Fantasy VII Remake, who knows? It's Nomura.
And I heard you're the one who told me that they scratched the game. Scrapped it and restarted.
Yeah, they scrapped the game. Basically, like CyberConnect is no longer working on the game, and now internal studios are actually making it.
Yeah.
Yeah, so there's that. Yeah.
Anyway, let's not talk about that because that's a sore subject with me. Yep. That's something I really do want to play like tomorrow, but can't.
Right.
So we have those, but Nintendo did the impossible. I'm just going to fucking say it, Alex, okay? They announced Metroid Prime 4.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know who's developing it. I know it's not Retro, correct?
It's Nintendo internal.
Okay, but we are getting a Metroid Prime 4.
It's in development for the Switch. Let's make that absolutely clear. It's on the Switch. It's not the Wii U. It's not the 3DS. It's on the Switch.
Mm-hmm. However, we are getting a remake of Metroid 2 on the 3DS.
Yes, by the end of this year.
Which is nuts.
Yeah.
Along with all the other good Nintendo stuff like Super Mario Odyssey
mm-hmm.
and Xenoblade Chronicles 2, which, man, that's a perfect game for the Switch.
Yeah, let's talk about that because I want to talk about all the other games. So let's talk about Xenoblade Chronicles. And again,
I want to go back and finish the original game.
Okay.
I do. I really want to go back and finish it. I know that's a little tougher for you because you only have the Wii version, correct?
I mean, it's hooked up. I could play it at any time, you know?
Okay.
So, I mean, I don't think it's tough. It's more like, hey, should we play, you know, Stormblood, which is coming out this Friday, or, you know, Xenoblade Chronicles, which, this is not really the realm of conversation where we should talk about those things. We're going to save that for next week's episode. But let's just say that many other things from the past have been occupying our time here.
Right.
And that's a teaser for those people.
Yes, sir. But yeah, Xenoblade Chronicles, I do want to go back and finish.
Okay, but yeah. Let's talk about 2, though. Like, did you like what you see? I mean...
Well, it's Takashi's god complex story again.
Mm-hmm.
He's going back to that, you know. There's a god. There's some sort of supreme being, and it created Valhalla and all that, you know, according to the trailer. And it looks like it's kind of an antagonistic force, which, you know, he uses that theme recurringly in most, if not all, the games he's made. You know, Xenoblade Chronicles X, I'm not too sure, but I can tell you for a fact that theme has run through, of course, my favorite game of all time, Xenogears, has run through Xenosaga and is prevalent in Xenoblade Chronicles.
Mm-hmm.
And will probably be prominent in this game.
Okay.
The one thing, though, that I noticed is there was a lack of a robotic theme in the trailer. I noticed that. I don't know if you noticed that, too.
Mm-mm.
Because robotics have always been a theme in all his games, whether that's giant mecha or just plain out robots.
Right.
Okay? So I didn't notice that high, like, super mechanical element to Xenoblade Chronicles 2 in the trailer.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I missed something or what? It seemed like it had a more mystical, magical element as opposed to the other games he's made, which is probably not a bad thing because he's probably trying something different. But the whole man versus God theme, I'm sure, is going to be in there. But I didn't notice anything with robots.
Right.
So what do you feel about that? Takashi basically leaving his robotic theme behind.
Again, I don't, you know, I'm with you. I don't see that it's anything bad. I feel like for me, I need to see a little bit more of the game. I know that my girlfriend will be really excited for that release. We do need to figure out when we're going to play Xenoblade Chronicles. That's a discussion for next week, for you and I to actually talk about too. But, you know, for me, like, I got really excited because I did not expect that Nintendo would continue the year of JRPGs, because Ever Oasis is also coming out, this year. I think it was like in August, you know?
3DS.
3DS, yeah. So that's coming out too. So it's like, all right, well, what else is coming? You know,
well, we got Valkyria Chronicles.
Yeah, Revolution.
You know, and Ni No Kuni in the fall as well. Ni No Kuni 2.
Mm-hmm. And so, you know, and in a way, like, you know, and I guess in a lesser extent, Fire Emblem Warriors is also coming out as well for the Switch. So, I you know, when they actually announced that game, I leapt from my seat. Because I never, you know, if there was any one game that I actually wanted to see as a Dynasty Warriors style game, it would have been Fire Emblem. And that is a perfect marriage of those two. And finally, maybe I can finish a Fire Emblem game.
Yeah, maybe you can finally finish one. But to be fair, that's not your genre. It's like going back to with me and driving sims and Forza and shit. That's not my cup of tea. You know what I mean?
Right, right, right.
And that's not your cup of tea, so.
Yeah. But needless to say, though, like, just the mere mention of Fire Emblem Warriors, I didn't even need to see the gameplay. I was like, yeah, I'm sold. I love these characters. I want to play with them in, you know, in another way, in an action game.
Right.
And that's great. And it's on the Switch. Again, like, did we actually know that a Fire Emblem Warriors game was coming out? I didn't. That shocked me. I was like, what the fuck? I thought the only thing that they were having was basically, like, you know, Mario Odyssey. But
oh, speaking of Mario Odyssey, mm-hmm. What the fuck? And I mean that.
I love it.
I love it too. But I'm like, what the fuck is this? It's such a weird game,
dude.
But it looks so cool.
Do you actually know the story behind the game? Oh my god, this will blow your fucking mind.
No clue. All I saw was Bowser trying to marry Peach, and that's about as much as I wanted to know for the story. I don't need a detailed story for this Mario
game. Yes, but also the boss characters are the wedding planners for Bowser. It's kind of crazy.
What the fuck?
Yeah.
But you know what, though? I noticed it looks like they took the gameplay of this. I was worried for a while that it was going to be
me too.
More Mario 64,
mm-hmm.
but it looked like a lot of the levels are Mario 3D Land or Mario 3D World-esque.
It's got the openness of 64, but I feel like here's really what it is, Anthony. And I think that this kind of encompasses a lot of the conversations we will be having with Odyssey once it comes out. They took the sandboxy idea of Zelda, mm-hmm. and kind of applied it to Mario, but in a good way, like in a way that makes a lot more sense. And how are they doing that? Well, by having a hat that can possess people or things or characters, right. and giving you different powers, right? It's almost like, you know, if basically Mega Man killed every single enemy in an entire level and get all their powers. It's kind of like that. It's kind of nuts. You know, and then
there's the different suits,
the different suits. Yeah, there's that too, but in the different hats as well. And it's kind of crazy, like, you know, the things that you can do in this game. You know, have you seen those, like, you know, those 2D side scrolling sections that are basically,
yeah, yeah.
Oh my god,
8-bit Mario. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
that game looks great. There's nothing, you know, bad I can say about it. I do have something I have to address here.
Okay.
Though I noticed I looked online and there are some people who are getting offended by Mario's fucking Mexican outfit.
Really?
Yep. Now, let me address this.
Nobody that I follow, thankfully.
No.
They love it.
No, I mean comment sections and things like that.
Oh, dear.
Okay, let me address this real quick. Shut the fuck up. Because you know what? Mario's a fucking stereotype as it is. Mm-hmm. Let's be honest. He's a fucking stereotype. No one says a goddamn fucking thing. Why? Because we're used to Mario. He's just fucking Mario to you now. But he's a stereotype. He's an Italian stereotype. And I'm Mexican, and I thought the sombrero thing was fucking awesome.
Look. There's a lot of, like, you know, weird fucking, you know, ridiculous shit, like, flying around, like, with, you know, with people complaining about basically everything and anything video games. Any, you know, trying to address these people is kind of like, you know, addressing...
Well, I'm still going to address them. They can go fuck themselves, the end. I'm still... I know, I don't... And I want our audience to hear it. I know I'm not going to change the fucking world, but stop being so... And I'm telling our audience this, our listeners here at Backlog Battle Podcast. The stereotypes exist all over, okay? Just get the fuck over it. That's all I got to say. And I will continue to complain about these things until I die. The end.
It's funny.
I'm sorry, but it's stupid. It's stupid. And you know what? Fuck, quit worrying about it. The game looks fucking great.
Mm-hmm. Well, despite those comments, you know, I think that I personally, you know, personally, I was super worried about this game myself. And I had the same concerns with you, like that, oh my God, Super Mario 64. But, you know, seeing a lot of the gameplay and the variants that you can use with his hat, using his hat as kind of like a platform, the attacks that you can use with it, the thematics of this being like Bowser trying to marry Peach is actually pretty cool. Pauline is the mayor of fucking New Donk City. I was like, Pauline is in this fucking game? Are you goddamn serious? I was, you know, and the music. The music is fantastic. I've said this on Twitter. If you don't follow me on Twitter, it's twitter.com/mybacklogbattle. I've said this on Twitter, but that music for this game is one of my favorite songs that I've ever heard in a Mario game in a very long time. I love it. It's like,
it sounded good.
Nintendo is firing on all cylinders. Like, when did you ever hear me compliment Nintendo on like music on a Mario game? That doesn't happen. It happened.
Is Koji what's his name? Konjo. Is it Koji Konjo?
Kondo? Kondo.
Kondo. Is he still doing the music?
No idea. All I know is the music is fucking fantastic. It's got the right fucking feel. It's crazy. It's got like this weird humor. You know, like there's like in the treehouse. I actually watched them play a little bit on the treehouse and stuff. That's where I got the whole like evil wedding planner, you know, like boss battle and stuff that I saw.
Oh, shit.
And it was just so much fun. Like it's crazy because like apparently anybody that have hats mean that you can't actually like possess them immediately. So you have to get rid of the hat first and then hit them again. Because like I noticed like in the one level that they were playing like, you know, the game, there are these bullet bills with like sombreros and you have to hit the sombrero off and then, you know, throw your hat in again to control the bullet bill. I saw that.
That man, looks a lot of fun.
Yeah. It's
going to be really good.
Yeah. I want to say it's from the Galaxy team, but you know, if it is, we're in good company.
It looks really good.
Mm-hmm.
So what else do we got? Let's talk Pokemon for a moment. Not your favorite topic, but I think it's important to address.
I think so. I think I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. So we, about a week ago, maybe 2 weeks ago, we got an announcement that we are getting Pokemon enhanced versions of Pokemon Sun and Moon. Mm-hmm. Which I'm a little apprehensive about, but I might check them out. I am the Pokemon guy of the group, the end, you know? But it was announced that the Pokemon team is developing a traditional mainline Pokemon game for the Switch.
Right.
This is fucking crazy. Because if you really think about it, I've always spoken about, as much as I like Pokemon, I think in the DS era, they almost got into a trap. And I think this needs to be reiterated. Okay, Alex?
Mm-hmm.
You've heard this before. They started to lose me with Black and White. They really did. And I'm not a graphics whore by any means, but I think the presentation of the Pokemon games, even at that point, were starting to make the game really stale.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and they were just relying too much on the old mechanics, and some of it felt archaic. With X and Y and Sun and Moon, and I'm not counting the Omega Ruby and Alpha, whatever, Alpha Sapphire, whatever. The reason I'm not counting those is because those were just a, you know, like a filler Pokemon game, but X and Y were mainline, and so was Sun and Moon. They took those games and made the battles feel like they were actual Pokemon battles from, say, that anime, which I'm not a fan of, but still, they made the battles more dynamic, okay? Really dynamic. And they did a lot of mechanical changes that made the games more streamlined. Doing this on the Switch has me excited because this is even going to elevate this to a level that Pokemon has never been at and may never have been at if it was not for the Switch.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I'm excited, because this is gonna be a mainstream Pokemon game that will not look like a handheld version, but will look like a console version. And the reason I say I'm thankful for the Switch is because I have reiterated this. So many people have asked, why don't they make a Pokemon mainline game in console? Because they're not designed for console. They're designed for handheld. Okay? That's a fact.
Mm-hmm.
And the Switch is both. So this is just going to elevate Pokemon to a whole level that it's never been at. So,
mm-hmm.
I know you're not a Pokemon guy, but I don't know if you agree with that.
I personally have been a champion of, like, trying to get Pokemon actually on a home console. I think that the Switch being a hybrid console is the perfect place for a core Pokemon game.
I agree.
The thing is I would, you know, like, I feel like this time around, I feel like the developers are probably going to get a little bit more freedom on how to implement new features on the Switch, because now we have a world of possibilities with the Switch, and that's kind of like what's the most exciting thing to me in general about not just Pokemon, but anything that's out there, you know? I want to say that there's so many different kinds of games that we've seen at, you know, the Nintendo, you know, Direct and stuff that I didn't even think about, like, you know, like playing, like, for example, like playing FIFA. I know it's not like it's an EA game and stuff, and it is quote unquote inferior to all the other current versions, but it's the only FIFA where you bring a Switch somewhere and you snap both Joy-Cons off and you have a two-player FIFA game going, you know? You have a two-player FIFA game right then and there. You don't need another controller, because guess what? You already have two controllers with your Switch. You know, how they're going to implement, you know, that, something like those features, like in Pokemon, we'll see. Like, I think that makes it all the more exciting.
I'm really excited for that. I mean, that is crazy news. That's crazy. You know, it's just, it's exciting, you know, to take Pokemon to that new level.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll say this, too. I am glad, too, and to a degree, that there's still a little bit life in the 3DS.
Yeah, the question is how much more? Because I feel like the 3DS is on its last legs, especially if, like, a lot of people are going to, you know, gonna wish, like, a lot of those games are now on the Switch, because right now we're seeing that movement happen. A lot of these games, people are hoping and wishing that they were on the Switch. And, you know, Nintendo, and here's the odd thing about Nintendo this year. They are listening to people, right? The fact that we got not one, but two Metroid games within the next year or so. And, by the way, and this is something that we sadly weren't able to cover in the previous episode of the podcast, not only did they drop the price of their online and pushed it to 2018, so it's not $24 anymore, it's $20. And they even changed their virtual console, kind of rules where, oh, if you only get this for a month, now you have a library of virtual console games, by the way, like Netflix, every month.
Last week's episode is really out of date.
Oh yeah, completely. When I actually, like, kind of apologized a little bit on Twitter, saying, like, yeah, some of the stuff we talked about is kind of outdated. I mean, we're talking the reverse pivot, right? But those are only two examples. We have a Nintendo now. Oh, and yeah, cross-platform Minecraft and Rocket League, by the way. Rocket League is coming on the Switch and all that stuff. I mean, we're seeing a very different Nintendo.
This is not Nintendo, dude. This is fucking nuts. This is not the Nintendo of any era.
Well, any previous era, for that matter. No, it's very new.
This is a very new, energized Nintendo.
Mm-hmm.
And I would not be surprised if the Switch here's my honest thing. I think the Switch will dethrone at least the Xbox as in second place.
I think that's already happened. I think people are already considering it as a number two console.
Yeah, I would rather have a Switch over an Xbox. I am done with Microsoft. Yeah, I know we talked about how decent their thing is, but I am done with Microsoft. Nintendo, I am not. And let me give our listeners a little bit of a history lesson regarding you, my friend. About a year ago, you said you were done with Nintendo.
Mm-hmm.
Even as early as 6 months ago, back in December, mm-hmm. you said you were done with Nintendo.
Mm-hmm.
Now look at you. Look at what that company has done. They've completely taken someone who swore off Nintendo and turned them into my equal on this podcast. I'm being honest. Am I not fucking right, Alex?
No. You're completely right. And it's kind of interesting you mention it that way, because it really was this interesting shift in the way that Nintendo was starting to show their products and also thinking about, like, this current platform. And I feel like, you know, and we talked about this before the show, but I feel like because they know that, you know, like Aonuma and Miyamoto aren't going to be around, they needed to have people who, you know, who are younger than them actually take the mantle and really, like, drive the company forward to a new Nintendo. That's why we saw Splatoon last year and, you know, or rather a couple of years ago, and, you know, the new Mario Kart and, of course, Mario Arms. Maker and Arms this year, and the new Splatoon coming in August, and, of course, Odyssey. You know, like, it compounds, you know, on and on and on and on. And mind you, like,
you know what? Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, like, with, you know, I was looking at Nintendo very, very carefully, you know, even in January when they showed, like, you know, the Switch and stuff and the ideas behind the Switch, I kind of knew what they were like, unlike most, you know, people. Like, out there, and you could listen to an old episode from January if you think I'm fucking lying, because it's all on mybacklogbattle.tv. You can download that episode when we talked about it.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, when I basically said, like, the fact that this is both a portable and a home console, it has the potential to really change the landscape of gaming. I said that, and it's, you know, and so far, it has stood as proof that this is, like, you know, the platform to really take advantage of it. And, you know, I know I'm kind of, like, rambling at this point, but let's use a concrete example, right? Like, the fact that Mario Kart 8 Deluxe came out a month after The Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild is not a mistake. There is a reason for that, because they knew that the people who were lucky enough to get a Switch were going to buy Mario Kart 8, which, by the way, one of the best-selling games in series history, that game, right?
Right.
Yeah, that game, the Switch version, not the one that, you know, it was based off of on the Wii U. That version is the fastest-selling, you know, Mario Kart of all time, right? They knew that when people got their Switches, they were going to buy Mario Kart, and guess what they were going to do? They were going to take it everywhere, and then they were going to show their friends, and then they're going to, you know, give them one of the Joy-Cons and say, here, play some Mario Kart with me. And this would happen over and over and over across the world, and then people would just slowly start converting to Nintendo again, like a fucking virus. I personally witnessed this, like, about a month ago when I showed some people the Switch, and they were like, wow, I love this thing, you know? And somehow I knew, and that's why, like, you know, when my buddy said, like, all right, you're going to get one, you know, if I can get one, like, you know, like, at midnight, I was like, all right, this is going to be amazing.
Well,
I know that was like such a long fucking thing, but no. I'm really excited about, like, you know, I'm actually genuinely excited about Nintendo. Like, it's just fucking great.
We might be seeing the best Nintendo era since the Super Nintendo.
Yeah, I hope so.
Because, you know, the Wii was a success, but the problem with the Wii was the third parties. They flooded it with a bunch of crap. Not Nintendo.
Yeah, yeah.
Nintendo had a lot of great games on it.
Stupid carnival games. Yeah.
Huh?
Stupid carnival games.
Yeah, carnival games. What else was... I don't even know. But they had a bunch of shit on the Wii, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The Wii U was... It's kind of like a Dreamcast or a TG-16 of this era.
It was a test. It was a test bed for like a second screen and stuff, which, you know, worked for some people. But, you know, really, you're going to bring like a fucking Wii U and the gamepad on a goddamn airplane and stuff and plug that bullshit in? Yeah, no.
But to me, the Wii U is in that same class of the Dreamcast and the TG-16, where they're great systems, but they didn't do exceptionally well. But in my opinion, and I know you disagree here, but I do think the Wii U itself has a great library.
I won't disagree with that, but also, you know, consider, like, the... I think even Nintendo didn't even know what to do with that fucking screen, you know?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm not denying you're wrong on that. I will agree with you. I'm just saying it's into that same class as the TurboGrafx and the Dreamcast and even the Saturn, where they were consoles that did not succeed, but they still somehow amassed a very solid and good library of games.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what the Wii U is to me.
Right.
It's the Dreamcast, it's the Saturn, it's the TurboGrafx-16, and even the Sega Master System of this era to me.
Mm-hmm.
It's in that same class. Thankfully, it's not in the 3DO or Jaguar class or CDI, so there you go.
Mm-hmm.
But I think we're going to see an amazing Nintendo era. And when I heard the Pokemon announcement, yeah, we probably won't see it for another year or two, but fuck. I am pumped. As a Pokemon fan, I'm pumped, you know?
Here's an idea, Anthony. I think this will get you really excited as well. Like, remember earlier when I talked about Mario Odyssey and how I feel like that they took a lot of the sandbox ideas with Zelda and tried to apply it to Mario and to make that gameplay a lot more meaningful? What if they applied that to Pokemon?
Possibly, yeah.
Because, I mean, that seems to be the ethos right now with their major properties, is to try to give, you know, to try to not build too complex of a systems that would be too unmanageable, but build simple systems that way experimental gameplay and just general gameplay experimentation could be possible, right? Like, think of the possibility of being able to turn into anybody in Mario Odyssey and how that would apply to your gameplay in terms of clearing a level. You know, that's a very different kind of feeling as opposed to, like, a typical Mario game where you have a flag at the end of the level, there's a start, there's a timer, right? And you know, thinking about, like, how they could apply that same idea to Pokemon and to many other, like, future Nintendo products is really, like, you know, like, the sky's the limit at this point. And I feel like, you know, like, by starting it with Zelda, we've kind of been shown, like, well, this is what's possible if we, you know, if we try it this way. Super Mario Odyssey is the realization of, like, well, we're taking that same idea, putting it into Mario, let's see what you can do. And now Pokemon is next. So that's going to be interesting.
Well, think about this, too, with Pokemon. I had just a thought. It might be hard because there's a lot of Pokemon. But what if you took the Pokemon, right? And instead of turn-based, which I don't mind if they keep it turn-based personally, but what if you took the core element of Pokemon, had all the RPG elements, even had the four moves that you're allowed, right?
Mm-hmm.
But you made one core gameplay difference. This is something I was thinking when you were talking. Take those elements, but instead of turn-based battles, having them as real-time battles.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, with your four attacks, you have four, like, hotkeys where those four attacks, those special attacks are assigned, and you use them that way in real time. Something like that. Imagine that.
Mm-hmm.
But there's also something you have to remember about Game Freak, though, while I like your idea and I like my idea, it may not happen because the big difference with Game Freak and the other Nintendo studios is Game Freak pretty much has the same staff since the original Pokemon and the same head. You have to keep that in mind.
Right.
So we may not see that drastic of a change, but to be fair, X and Y and Sun and Moon have, in my opinion, evolved that series a lot more. And it's made it fresh. Like, I was even worried at one point that Sun and Moon was going to be a rehash of X and Y, right? Mm-hmm. I even told you this.
Right.
And I even said this on the show. But it became my game of 2016 for a reason. So I have complete faith that maybe they won't evolve it to the extent that they did Zelda, but they'll evolve it enough for it to be fresh. Does mm-hmm. that make sense?
Sure.
But I do like our ideas of freshness. I just don't think it's going to happen because, again, Game Freak is still run by those same guys. So,
well, I feel like if there's any other franchise that we should take a look at that will probably apply this idea, it would probably have to be Metroid Prime.
Yeah, I have no clue.
Yeah.
What that's going to be.
Again, we're obviously positing, but there is an obvious initiative within Nintendo to try to figure out how to create gameplay opportunities by creating rules in the world. You know, we saw that in Zelda, obviously. We've seen that in Mario Odyssey, and I'm pretty sure, like, there's an initiative moving forward to apply that to a lot of their games, and that's really exciting to me.
See, and if you look back at Metroid Prime, remember how controversial that game was? Mm-hmm. A lot of people forget that when it was announced. And it did that. It did. You know, the thing about Metroid Prime was, for Nintendo, it was way ahead of its time. And I say that at the time, and I say it was a way ahead of its time, is it did the same thing that Zelda did, or any of these other games you're talking about, just back in 2002. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
And that's my whole thing on it. It just altered Metroid in such a way, but yet keeping it fresh, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I love Prime. I think Metroid Prime is an amazing fucking game.
Mm-hmm.
And 2 is okay. 3 was all right. But I would not be surprised, people, if Metroid Prime 4 was not a first-person game.
I think it still will.
Okay. But I wouldn't be surprised if it wasn't.
People would be so mad if it wasn't, if it wasn't first person. I'm just saying, like, there's a reason why the Prime moniker is such, like, you know, is pretty huge. It's because of that first person. It is about the exploration in first person. Without that, it's not Metroid Prime. It's another Metroid game altogether. I mean, it's Other M, basically.
I gotcha.
But let me talk about the other game that really stole the show, I feel. And this is a game where about a week or two ago, people shit on it big time because they were like, oh, man, there's no way that this is real. There's no way this is even going to be good. And then it got shown like last night at the Ubisoft press conference. And people were like, oh, fuck, we're eating crow on this. And I'm talking about Mario and Rabbids Kingdom Battle, which I sum it up. It's basically like XCOM with Mario and the Rabbids. It's fucking amazing.
It looks like it's going to be a solid game. I'm sorry. I hate the Rabbids as much as I hate Bubsy, as much as I hate Cream the Rabbit, as much as I hate Fat Biggs the Cat or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but like this one really turned me around on the Rabbids. Like, again, this is not a franchise that I personally care about, but man, the opportunity to be able to play, like, you know, it's kind of funny because, like, I was thinking the other day, like, who the hell is going to knock off XCOM? Who the fuck is going to do that? Because XCOM has been around. There have been 2 sequels, multiple expansions. Who the hell is going to be ballsy enough to basically say, hey, we're making an XCOM as well? I didn't expect it to be like a Mario Rabbids game. This is kind of nuts, and it's kind of still blowing me away up to this point.
Yeah. Yeah, you know? I just can't. I'm going to admit it, and I'm going to concede. I am being completely shallow. The Rabbids completely turn me off.
Mm-hmm.
I know. That's a stupid reason. Call me out on it. Everyone can call me out on it. I am recognizing it. But I just hate them more than you ever did, Alex.
Wow.
So,
yeah.
It looks, to be fair, the game looks fun,
mm-hmm.
but I just can't. Yeah.
Yeah. I think this is actually one of those games where I was like really super surprised that it came out so left field. People didn't believe it exists. And then when it existed, just so many people were just like, yeah, I'm on board. And, you know, and that's kind of like my reaction to it too. And I'm like, you know, it's not that bad of an idea. it's got like the Mario I mean, it's not just because of the Mario stuff, right? It's not even right. just because of the Rabbids stuff. But they do a lot of really cool things that many other kinds of turn-based strategy games are actually doing, like a lot of really good mobility right. options and stuff. The fact that, you know, you can slingshot from like one character to another and stuff, do Overwatch mode, which we're not talking about like the FPS, but we're talking about like the Overwatch mode in like XCOM, where if somebody runs across a battlefield, somebody's going to shoot that guy because they're in Overwatch mode, you know, like they're
right.
kind of like in guard mode. And I was really surprised like that this game had that. And, you know, and as far as the story goes, like, I'm just not even caring about the story. I just basically, like, thought that in terms of, like, the actual core idea, the execution of it was so belonging. It's like, think of it this way, Anthony. When you hear, like, Rabbids and Mario was going to be in the game, I couldn't even think of what fucking genre that would be. Because these are two of the most different sets of characters ever, right? But then, you know, you see this and you're like, that makes a lot of sense. It's a weird feeling for me to kind of like admit defeat and be like, yeah, you know, turn-based strategy makes a lot of sense for this game. I don't know why, but it feels that way, and it actually feels really good. Again, I know you are seething right now because you really don't like the Rabbids. I get it.
I'm torn because it looks like I'm not saying it's going to be a bad game, but I hate those little fuckers.
So far, they haven't been annoying, like, so from what I've seen.
They are the worst fucking video game creation in the last decade.
So do you hate them more than the minions from Despicable Me? Because they're basically the same thing.
Yeah, I hate the minions too.
So. Okay.
But the minions I can easily get away from, you know what I mean? I know they're all over the place because they're a bit more mainstream, but I don't, you know, they don't, I'm not seeing a Minions with Batman crossover or something.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Sure.
I'm not seeing that. I'm seeing Rabbids with Mario.
Mm-hmm. Which, again, so, Nintendo wouldn't just hand, like, the keys to the kingdom if they didn't see, like, any value in this. That's why I feel like it's kind of, you know, to me it's interesting that, you know, I kind of put more stock on Nintendo making this decision than you at this point. Only because they're being paired with Rabbids.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, would you prefer, like, Rayman?
Yes, I would prefer Rayman. I like Rayman. I like Rayman. Here's the thing with Rayman. Rayman is kind of like not a serious character, but he wasn't a stupid character. He was one of those. He was a character that was just fit in his own platformer. It kind of had that dark feel of, like, you know, some of the older Disney films, like The Little Mermaid, you know, like had musicals and shit, but there was a darker tone to it. You being a Disney guy would know that, right?
Maybe. I mean, it depends on what Disney stuff we're talking about. Disney,
like The Little Mermaid and shit like that. I'm talking about Disney Renaissance shit.
Okay.
Okay? Like, there were darker tones underneath, like in The Lion King and stuff like that. And that's how Rayman felt with me. Okay? But when they brought in the Rabbids, it fucking made Rayman stupid. But then, fortunately, they did Rayman Origins and Legends, which in sight were very good games and took Rayman back to his roots without the fucking Rabbids.
Mm-hmm.
But the Rabbids became like the fucking minions, so there you go.
Mm.
Fuck the Rabbids. Euthanize all those little fucks.
Jesus. Well, we're not going to get like a really good Nintendo game on the Switch as well. And by the way, let's talk about this. It is a turn-based strategy game coming out on the Switch. On the Switch, not the 3DS. On the Switch.
Okay.
So yeah, all this stuff, yeah. The Wii U is practically dead at this point. Can we agree on that? Because really, there really isn't anything else coming out on the Wii U.
Oh, the Wii U is dead. There's no doubt about it. Okay. Yeah, I still. Right. But you know what's weird? I will tell you something.
Mm.
They're still releasing a ton of virtual console games.
Wii U. God, we talked about this story already, but this is unbelievable.
They did it this week.
I know. I believe you. It's kind of dumb. It's pretty dumb. Okay. So
do your virtual console on the Switch, people.
Yeah, no kidding. Hopefully in the fall. All right. So moving on to something else completely. I watched a little bit of Far Cry 5. I am actually probably, you know, thinking about picking it up. It looks really cool. I hope that they don't do the stupid like faction A, faction B, but both factions are actually bad and you pick the wrong faction anyway kind of situation, kind of like in Far Cry 4. Which really, really sucks, by the way. I do find the Montana setting compelling from a narrative and kind of like a setting standpoint. Because, you know, it's almost reminds me of this weird, you know, like the weirdness of like the townsfolk in Resident Evil 4 in a way, you know. You know what I'm talking about? Kind of zombie-ish, right. But not so much. But they're a zombie, right, in a different way, like because they're part of a cult. I don't know if there's going to be anything political there. I don't really care, honestly. I think I think in terms of like the gunplay, it's going to be fantastic. They've never strayed away from, you know, from that at least. You know,
speaking of political stuff too, I'm not going to address it now, but look forward to that being something that we talk about.
Oh no!
In future. No. I'm not talking about our current political situation.
Oh.
I'm talking about how people look too much into politics and games when it's not necessary.
People look in the games too much for anything general.
Yeah, we'll talk about that in more detail. This is E3. Fuck all our deep philosophical shit for today.
but you want to talk about the biggest surprises of anything. Ubisoft actually had the biggest surprise of them all. By revealing that they're actually working on Beyond Good and Evil 2, a franchise that we haven't heard in 15 fucking years. It's been that long.
I don't have an attachment to that game, though.
It's really good. I actually started playing it again to show Jenna what it looks like and how it plays. It still really holds up really well. It's basically like if Ubisoft made a Zelda game, but much more mature.
I have it on PS3.
It's really good.
I'll give it a shot. Yeah. I have it on PS3.
Remember that it was made 15 years ago. So even if it is on PS3, it's going to be dated as shit. Like some of the storytelling and stuff, maybe some of the controls might be outdated. But still, if you think about the reverence and you want to talk about a cult following, this one had it, right?
Yeah, and I know that.
And there's a rich kind of layer of storytelling that they really weaved into the original game. And mind you, I'm like about like an hour and a half into the game, but I could really tell like that, you know, even then, like there, I could see like why I appreciated the game. And even now I can appreciate it for the very same things. Great character development, a story that, you know, borders on really dark, right? But sometimes very pleasant. Fantastic music. Oh my god, like the Mama Go Garage music, if you ever listen to that for one time, even on YouTube, it will stay in your brain like a fucking, you know, parasite. It's kind of crazy. It has one of the best like open overworld themes like in that era that I've ever listened to. That's not hyperbole, it really is. But here's the thing that's crazy. Michel Ancel is back to actually direct this game.
Okay.
And I could have sworn he was making a fucking game with Sony called Wild. You remember that trailer? I think it was like last year or 2 years ago.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. That's the thing that like made me be like, huh? How are you directing two games? How's that even possible?
I have no clue, bud.
Maybe Wild was canceled.
I don't know. We'll see. Maybe it's vaporware.
Yeah, at this point, right? So it is a prequel to Beyond Good and Evil 1. So you don't actually have to play Beyond Good and Evil 1 to be able to appreciate it. But check this out. And this is the thing that really kind of is crazy. They've been developing this game for 3 years, and they wanted to, quote-unquote, create a seamless online playground with your friends. Which, again, this might mean we have yet another shared world experience.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
In Beyond Good and Evil 2?
Yeah.
I don't know about that.
That's
not everything needs to be online. Not everything needs to be online. I'm just saying.
But here's the thing, though. Like they made clarification on this. They said that they wanted people to be able to play this as a single player game and or as a co-op game. But basically, like, you know, the way that they were envisioning the online is like, let's say there's a person who is further in the game than you are, but you need help with a boss or something like that. They could join your game and help you out. So there's nothing really meaningful in terms of, like, you know, kind of like a Destiny type, you know, kind of online experience. I guess I shouldn't have said, like, you know, the seamless online playground. That seems kind of disingenuous to say that it's kind of like a shared world shooter or something, but it's kind of like along those lines, like somebody to help you out with a storyline if you need help, you know, almost like if you think Bloodborne without the, you know, PvP and just have genuine, like, hey, I'm going to help you out kind of situation. You know,
I gotcha. Yeah. I don't have much to say on it. I don't have an attachment to it. I will give the game a try eventually, but I just don't have a lot to say. I will say, though, and I don't want to abruptly switch the topic because I know you're really excited about this game, right? Mm-hmm. Beyond Good and Evil 2.
Well, there's only so much I can talk about it, though, sadly.
I know this is a good way to, I think we might be closing out the show soon, but you know, it was a game that did interest me from Ubisoft, and I did watch the trailer a couple times. I'm not the biggest fan of pirates, but that pirate game kind of got my attention.
Hmm.
It looks like it would be fun. Now, of course, you know, like, let's keep in mind, Ubisoft is notorious for showing trailers that look better than their finished games.
I think that's all gameplay, though. Because the reason why I say this is because Black Flag already does that. So, I mean, how much harder could it be to just add more ships? And Black Flag had weather conditions, you know? So it's not outside the realm of possibility. Now, but here's the thing, Anthony, and this is a big one. Microsoft's, you know, like Rare specifically, has that game called Sea of Thieves. Now, you might be excited about that game, but there are many things that they showed about Sea of Thieves that do, you know, that basically do more of like the pirating and plundering than that game, right? Because to me, like, because you're talking about, I want to say you were talking about a game called, I'm looking at my notes, it is called Skull and Bones. They said Skull and Bones is going to be a fall 2018 release.
Right.
They only showed naval warfare, and that's the thing. You, as a pirate, you don't just drive over loot in the sea and magically get it. You have to go on land. You have to plunder stuff. You have to find treasure, and that's the thing that's crazy that Sea of Thieves actually has in its shared world. You know, like, kind of exploration that it does. Go ahead.
No. I interrupted you because I'm going to go on a little bit of a tangent. Continue.
So, like, because to me, like, in between the two, like, Sea of Thieves really intrigued me because that is an experience you can enjoy with your friends, because you're just not piloting a fucking ship. You have three other crewmates that have to do the cannons, that have to, you know, man the sails, that have to do the navigation along with you. In addition to that, getting to an island, you all can try to figure out where the treasure is. And the treasure is, I think, procedurally generated. I would imagine that's what it is. And each of the islands actually have their own treasure. They have their own secrets. And you can do some really kind of fun, ridiculous stuff because of the cartooniness of it, like shoot people off of cannons in order to kind of easily, like, you know, kind of get to a certain point, like, you know, I think they showed ship battles last year, but that to me is a more compelling experience because there's more people that you can work with. Not one ship is just one person. And while I appreciate that, there are many other games that have that have danced this dance before, Sid Meier Pirates being one of them.
I was going to talk about that.
Yeah. And that's why I'm kind of like still like, all right, I need to see a little bit more of what Skull and Bones is going to be before actually, like, you know, saying like whether or not, you know, basically I was in the same situation as you with like Anthem, because I'm like, I don't know about this. I need to see more.
I am interested in it, but I need to see more too. I wanted to bring up Sid Meier's Pirates, and I'm not talking about that one from about a decade ago or so. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about the old school one from And I'm talking about the NES port. I'm surprised I never mentioned this on the show. It's not like a shocking revelation. But for some reason, I never really got into games that were like heavily text-based or anything. But for some reason, I really liked Sid Meier's Pirates.
Mm-hmm.
At the NES port. And I remember there were a bunch of things, like you could take over towns and it almost became political and you could duel like a fucking governor and all kinds of cool shit. And there were, you know, like manage your ships and get to know your crewmates. And I really liked that game on the NES.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was watching the Skull and Bones, the trailer, I was thinking, you know, the naval battles were cool, but what if they added all those aesthetic elements from, right, like, say, Sid Meier's Pirates, mm-hmm, where you could talk to your crew,
yeah,
or you could go to the towns and take them over, or duel with governors and things, mm-hmm, like that?
Yeah,
that would be fucking awesome.
That's where I'm getting at, is that Sea of Thieves seems to have a lot of that stuff already, including the treasure hunting. So that's the thing. In order to elevate the gameplay of like Skull and Bones, they need to have those elements you mentioned, plus the stuff that they have in Sea of Thieves to make it really truly interesting. You know, that's kind of like where I am as well. So let's kind of like hurry on, because obviously like we're kind of running out of time. I am super excited that Horizon Zero Dawn has an expansion coming by the end of the year, by the way. In case people don't know, they just announced the Frozen Wilds is the game that is the name of the expansion. And it's going to take us to like the north, which you haven't really played too much of this game. So I'm not going to get too deep into it. There's a tribe called the Banuk in the very north part of the map. And I feel like that's probably where all that is going to start. It's a really interesting expansion. I think it's smart of them to do such a thing. The Vita is not dead, by the way. Undertale is coming out on the PS4, which is cross-buy for Vita as well, finally, this summer. That's coming out. Especially for people who have missed out on, you know, and on the PC. Destiny 2 is coming out 2 days earlier. So it's like coming out like September 6th as opposed to 8th. I am probably going to change my physical pre-order to a digital one so I won't miss out on that. And let's see, what else is there? I guess Gran Turismo is coming out. Whoop-de-frickin-do. Yeah, I know. It's like interesting name change. Hot Shots Golf is now forever called Everybody's Golf, which is the Japanese, which is the Japanese name of the game.
Oh, I get you.
Okay. Yeah. Ubisoft has a pew-pew shooter kind of game called Starlink, which also is a Toys to Life game because you actually have a fucking physical goddamn spaceship that's attached to your goddamn DualShock 4 controller or whatever the fuck you're going to play this with.
What?
Yeah.
And okay, never mind. I don't even want to know. Keep going.
Didn't see this? Wow. That's kind of crazy. I mean, I'm just kind of like mentioning some of the stuff that I found notable. The Fractured Butthole, the South Park game, is coming on the 17th. Heh. I see what I did there. I don't think I'm going to get it. It's kind of sad because like I was really excited for South Park and then all of a sudden it's dead.
Oh.
You know, and I love the original South Park. I don't know what happened that I'm just not excited about that game anymore. You know?
Well, you know, it happens, man.
And, you know, Assassin's Creed Origins was talked about, which, you know, they had a poll. You say that they had a poll on Twitch that asked people like, are you interested in Assassin's Creed Origins? More than 70% of the people said no. So that whole year that this was incubated didn't even fucking matter. The Evil Within 2 is coming out, which I'm just not into that franchise, you know? Like, currently the game is on sale on PSN, and I just don't know. I just don't. I don't know. I wish I was more excited about it, but, you know, it is what it is. There's a Dishonored expansion pack coming, which I haven't even finished the first one. Hell, I haven't even finished or started the second one. You know? So, yeah, it's totally in my backlog. Here's the thing that I was trying to kind of browse through, and I am reading through my notes, so sue me. A prequel to Life is Strange is coming out this summer.
Okay. Is that the big announcement they were making or no?
What do you mean?
Remember the Life is Strange people made an announcement?
Oh, no. Those people said that they are officially going to start working on 2. This is not 2. This okay. this is a prequel. The actual name of the game is called Life is Strange Beyond the Storm. It is being developed by somebody else entirely. Now, I forget who the actual name of the developers, but this developer was formerly called Idle Minds. If that name actually, like, you know, strikes you as familiar, they were the guys responsible for Cool Borders 3 on the PlayStation. Yes, I went back there. Yeah. I should be good, though. It's supposed to be the story of Chloe. It's his backstory. It's her backstory. So it's three parts, and it should be a pretty good game. Also, the guys who actually made Life is Strange is releasing a game called Vampyr this year. Now, I got to actually check this out, you know, outside of the press conferences, like, you know, watching the video and stuff. And this looks fucking cool. Like, if you remember Vampire the Masquerade from, like, several years ago, Bloodlines and all that stuff, imagine if it was actually a competent action RPG.
Yeah, that last one wasn't exactly
competent. No, it's not. But this one is. So think about all the kind of decision making that you made, like, in Life is Strange, mixed with, like, some really good action, which, you know, I've played Remember Me. They're really good action guys. So definitely something to think about. And, yeah, I mean, Cuphead is finally coming out, maybe. Because, I mean, that's been around for, like, 3 years, right? It should come out.
Longer than that.
Yeah, probably, right?
You know what? I think I remember seeing Cuphead as far back, and I could be wrong. Someone could correct me on this.
Mm-hmm.
But I think I saw Cuphead as far back as the reveal presentation for the Xbox One.
Oh, Jesus, in 2013? Holy fuck.
I think so.
Holy shit.
I really do think I saw it that far back.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Well, those are all the games that I have listed. Again, these are all just compiled from the press conferences. But like, you know, what Anthony and I have said earlier, E3 is still going on. We just decided to record this because we just wanted to share our excitement with E3 with you in a timely manner. So that way, again, it's not like a month later when we talk about E3 and, you know, it's like, wait, that already happened. You know, it's kind of weird. So, but before we leave, we do have a question from we have to go through these questions. I have like 20 questions. We're just doing like one at a time.
Okay.
This person actually asked to be anonymous. So it says, "Dear Alex and Anthony, I just want to say that I'm a new fan and I love the chemistry between you two. So keep it up. Also, if you can please omit my name, that would be appreciated. I have a question for both of you. Anthony, I've seen your occasional tweets on Twitter, and I have to say that it's very intimidating to try and talk to you. You seem highly abrasive, and I'll be honest, I'm actually afraid to interact with you because of how angry you always seem to be. Is this how you always are? The reason I ask is because I have friends that I've tried to get to listen to a podcast, but they share my sentiment that you seem not to want any attention and somehow invite negative criticism. Please don't crucify me for this. I'm just a genuinely concerned fan that would like our small community to grow. And I'm taking a huge risk being criticized by you just by emailing this. So again, please take it for what... Damn, this is pretty deep, dude. What the fuck did you do? But anyways, this
used to it though.
But again, like if it's new, like this guy, he's new to it. I'm new to it, but other people who might be new, like this guy, you know, wow, this, yeah, wow. I mean,
that's the first complaint. Number two, I'm not going to crucify him because of the way he addressed it. Okay.
Okay.
I get abrasive sometimes because people say stupid things, and Alex has always seen, and you can back me up on this. I need your back on this, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Usually when I get abrasive, it's when people say really stupid things, and you know, and am I not right? You can agree, you can say that.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think you get really emotional when it comes to these things, but also, like, you know, personally, like, and this is not like I'm not saying that you're wrong, but I feel like you could word your things better. And that's not necessarily a bad thing though, because I feel like you are a very articulate person, and when we talk about things on the podcast, you are very articulate, and you are able to explain things in ways that unfortunately a 140 fucking character limit just can't, right? So, and that's kind of like where I'm getting at. I feel like much of the replies that you have are filled with emotion, which is great. but, you know, but a lot of it is like in the heat of the moment, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, and I haven't been on, to be fair, I haven't really been on Twitter much.
Mm-hmm.
And when I have been, what has it been? Alex, I agree with you. Alex, this, to be fair. So mm-hmm. that I do disagree with the new listener.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm not crucifying him. I'm not going to say, fuck you. And you can say hello. I'm actually pretty approachable. I'm a lot more approachable than most YouTubers.
Mm-hmm.
You do know this.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Actually, to be honest, I'm the more, this is going to shock you. I am more approachable, and yes, I'm going to sound like an arrogant douchebag, but Alex will admit this too, and there's a reason why Alex is the way he is. I'm more approachable than Alex.
Yeah, in a way, yeah.
Yeah, and it's and explain why that is, because I don't want you to throw – I'm not trying to throw you under the bus or make you seem unfriendly, but I want you – because I know the reasons why, and they're legit. Tell them why you're not as approachable as I am.
Well, as far as I'm concerned, like, I just – you know, like, I try to have conversations with a lot of people. So it's not like I'm trying to, like, I ignore people in terms of like our conversations, but I think the best way to describe it is that Anthony and I are very private people, but there are different ways that in which we value our privacy. I get, is that, does that make sense? Is that like a good explanation?
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay. So for me, like, you know, like I tend to, you know, on my PlayStation Network account, for example, I tend to call my PlayStation Network account if I start not knowing who the people in my friends list are, and I start removing people, right? The same, you know, I'm not the same way on the Twitter account, because I feel like it's a global conversation, right? But I've had a lot of people ask me if they can add me as like a Facebook friend, and I say no, because why? What's the point? Right? Like, I talk to you guys every single day on Twitter and Facebook.
Right.
What's the benefit of you seeing my personal photos? You know, like, what's the point in that?
Exactly. Because your Facebook, I'm friends, well, obviously, because we're not just YouTube partners. Alex and I are very, very close to each other.
Mm-hmm. We're close friends. I consider Anthony as one of my closest friends. Like, I confide in him a lot more than my other friends.
Exactly. And even today I told him a very personal story, which I will not tell you guys.
Yeah, please don't. I laugh so hard though, but we're not going to tell that story.
Yeah,
just thinking about that story though. Oh my God.
That should be the title of the story. No, that we can't tell.
No, we're not going to.
I know it has to be generic. No. E3 2017. But Alex's Facebook is meant for that. The difference though is my Facebook is kind of my public forum and I run it that way. Mm-hmm. And Alex can attest to you, I have a lot of friends. Obviously we're friends on Facebook, but mm-hmm. when I do post on Facebook, it's never anything personal anyway. Mm-hmm. Even if it was like as tight knit as Alex's, I would still not post personal stuff
mm-hmm.
because I'll be honest, even though I'm more open in a way to talking to the fans and Alex's, and he has his reasons. There's nothing wrong with that. Mm-hmm. You know, like he just explained, in a way I'm a lot more private than Alex.
Mm-hmm.
You know this. Yeah. I knew if you see my Facebook, I have an 11-year-old son. I think I've posted one picture of him in the whole time.
And even then you'd have to dig through like your feed to get to it.
Yeah. I never post anything about my love life. I never post anything about my son. I never post anything about my home life. I don't. I just talk about dumb shit.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the way it should be. It's funny because I look at TimeHop. I don't know if you use TimeHop, but there's days when I look at it and I'm like, I see my posts and they're like, just like, oh, well, you know, what do you guys think of this game? And I remember that day and I remember it being a really shitty day mm-hmm. for very personal reasons. And I look back on it and I'm like, you know, no one had a fucking clue about it. So.
Mm-hmm.
And if that's deceptive, I'm sorry, but I keep my personal life private.
Mm-hmm.
And let's go back to the tweeting, because I understand your concerns. And you're a new fan. If you just discovered the podcast, I can understand that. But just know that I'm abrasive for a reason, and Alex usually supports me in it.
Mm-hmm.
Usually. And if he disagrees with me, he'll get abrasive himself.
Mm-hmm.
But never – here's the thing I'm going to tell all you guys. You see me on Twitter – or even on Facebook, send me a friend request on Facebook. Send me a tweet on it. I will not insult you just for the sake of insulting you. Alex mm-hmm. knows that.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, I don't really insult people. I just argue when I think someone does say something really incredibly ignorant,
mm-hmm.
or incredibly, you know, stupid. I'll even say that, you know, or they don't know what they're talking about when it comes to something.
Mm-hmm.
If I feel that way, you know, just a real quick thing, and I know we need to end this, but I have to tell this.
There's yeah, a guy I haven't even like read his question to me, but go ahead.
Okay, I know, but this is he has to address it though. I understand why. There's a guy who I get along with pretty well on Twitter. Not going to mention his name, but I'm always arguing with him,
mm-hmm.
and it's you know it comes across abrasive and such. So. You know, I argue, but I'm going to tell you this, and I appreciate your question, and I appreciate your bravery, and don't be afraid to say hi, because I'm not going to go off and just attack you to attack you. Alex knows that, right?
Mm-hmm, right.
Back me up on this. Say that piece real quick.
Sure.
I don't do that. You do know me.
Yeah.
You know, and if you think if I'm wrong and you prove me wrong, which Alex does on a regular basis, and I do a regular basis to him, I'm not going to go get all sad on you either. It's okay if you prove me wrong. That's the type of guy I am, because if I can dish it out, why the fuck, you know, I should be able to take it.
Mm-hmm. I think more to kind of add to this, more importantly and stuff, like, you know, I was, you know, doing like a kind of like a business thing like today and stuff, just to kind of think about like, you know, what do we want to attract with our podcast? And, you know, if anything and stuff, we want to be able to attract people who might be kind of shy and meek in terms of like their personal opinions. Maybe like, you know, they get, you know, people kind of like you, anonymous person, like, you know, maybe like you're not quite sure of your personal beliefs and stuff like that, but we want to help you kind of like find your own voice. Right. And I feel like that's been the kind of, you know, guiding light that Anthony and I have had through all the podcasts that we've done, regardless of whether it's TPPPG or Game Horizon or this, is that we want you to find your own voice and, you know, to be able to articulate well, you know, to be able to show your views and what, you know, and not actually, you know, in a way, not actually even care about like, you know, what other people's views are, but be able to respect it. Right. You know, and this kind of like goes with what Anthony was saying with his opinions and stuff, and actually being able to dish it, in, if you will. It's more about like creating a conversation, talking about the merits of it, being able to try to empathize with the other side and how they're coming to that conclusion, and then kind of like trying to apply it and saying right. like, all right, well, this is why we're disagreeing, and that's why, you know, maybe we'll never resolve it. But I get where you're coming from. That's why I feel like one of the things that, you know, Anthony says a lot in the show too is I get where you're coming from, you know, but he's, you know, in terms of our conversation, we can fuck around and actually joke around and be like, oh yeah, you're a fucking asshole, blah, blah, blah. But it's all in joking, right? We wouldn't be friends for like, what is it now?
A decade.
Like eight, you know, almost a decade if, you know, if we took a lot of this seriously, you know? So yeah, like I would, you know, like if for some reason he still intimidates you, you can always follow like our Twitter account, join the Facebook group if you search for, you know, Backlog Battle Podcast community, or, you know, like us on Facebook. There's many ways to try to interact with us with just, you know, directly.
And I'm not going to change the way I do things. Okay. And Alex wouldn't want that. Right.
Mm-hmm.
It gets me in trouble, but I'm okay with that because I get in trouble a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Alex knows this, but right. But I'm not, again, I'm not the type of guy. I can be overly abrasive, I'll admit that, but if you tell me, hey Anthony, how are you, what do you think of this game, I may not sugarcoat how I feel the game, but I won't be rude to you though either.
Mm-hmm.
I may say, hey, I hope you're doing well. Well, I think that game looked like fucking shit, but I will say
but that's an Anthony response, you know. Yeah. And I understand that it's kind of difficult to even convey that, you know, that, hey, you know, but let's put it this way, right? If you don't, and I'm not saying that, you know, you should condemn Anthony for this either. If you don't like his views or the way that he presents it, there's the second person in the group too. Like, I'm here as well. So if you feel like, you know, like, mm-hmm. and it's not, and I'm not saying to side with me or Anthony, but, you know, like, you're, I think that's the beauty of our podcast, is we're two very different people. And, you know, some people might find me abrasive, but some people might find me approachable. The same goes with Anthony. So to me, like, it's more about, you know, I guess comfort level at this point, because and actually, let's even get this even further.
You've been condemned before, actually, by listeners.
Sure. Yeah.
Remember last summer that listener?
Oh, yeah,
that,
yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. You're not doing anything that, you know, hasn't been done to Alex. Actually, Alex has been more condemned by people than I have.
Mm-hmm.
And which is, I find weird, because Alex is a lot more calmer than me.
Yeah.
But he has been. He mm-hmm. has been condemned, too.
Yeah.
And unrightfully so, though.
Mm-hmm.
Unrightfully so.
Right.
But he has been, we had a listener that accused Alex of being a bully to me for some reason.
Yeah, some reason.
Yeah, we got a letter saying that I'm intimidating people, so go figure, you know?
Right. Yeah, it's a weird world we live in.
But anonymous dude, don't be afraid. And if I still intimidate you, you know, I'm sorry, but, you know, I'm not,
and I
appreciate your letter, but I'm not going to change.
And I'll add this. We have a perfect place to get to know us better. And that's the Facebook, you know, community page, which is, again, if you search for, you know, Backlog Battle Podcast community. Now, the community part you need to add, because that's very important. If you join, we'll approve you right away. And then you can post, like, you know, like comments and suggestions and stuff, or even like anything video games. You know, like we have very simple rules there, which we're not going to get into, but it's a very welcoming community. It's very active. We talk about video games a lot. I am genuinely curious about what other people play. Anthony, you know, is the same way. You know, we talk about sometimes movies and stuff, and it's just an opening and welcoming environment. We hope to see you there, you know?
Yeah.
Again, like I think it's a great alternative to just directly contacting us even, you know, so.
Yeah. Yeah. Just to talk, chat with us and. You know, and to be honest, there hasn't been a lot of stuff. He did ask me one last thing, though, that I forgot to answer. He asked if I'm like this.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, I am like this in my personal life. Mm-hmm. That's the one thing that I think I'm unique at, is I don't think I change face too much for the internet, because I go to school and I've been. And while I have a lot of friends, I'll admit I am pretty popular. I'm not trying to toot my own horn. But I will admit I've gotten in trouble a few times because I am outspoken as all hell, and I live in a politically correct world.
Mm-hmm.
And Alex knows this. He knows for a fact that this is the Anthony that you hear here and on Twitter is the same Anthony you will meet in real life.
Right. Exactly. Well, I haven't met you in real life, so. Like in person, that is.
Yeah, but you'll soon find out that, you know,
that's true. Oh, man. Okay.
Don't worry. I won't get mad at your girlfriend. So.
Jesus Christ. Okay. Let's get to my question. This is noticeably shorter than the long ass fucking paragraph. Anyways, I'm not making fun of you, Anonymous. Anyways, Alex, do you feel that you tweet too many gaming news that we don't actually see? Oh, that we don't actually see who you are. I appreciate the ton of news and deals that you post on the Twitter account, but don't you think it might be too much? I'd love to see your more personal gamer side.
Damn, this guy's on the roll today.
I know, right?
I like Anonymous. Yeah. You know, don't be. I like this guy.
Yeah.
Don't be scared, man. Just tell us how you feel. I'm not being sarcastic. I like this because he's not being a. He's not being a pussy. He's telling us how. You know what? You do post a lot of gaming news.
Yeah. Okay. So to answer that question, I've felt that way a lot lately. The reason why I do that is because I feel that, that's my personality though. Like there is a huge part of me that loves this gaming news stuff. Like Anthony can attest to this. Like
he's always done this. He has always done this in the decade I've known him.
Yeah. So I mean, it's going to be out of my character actually if I stop posting stuff. Now, here's the thing that's kind of I've changed in a way. Like I will write commentary about the stuff that I post sometimes. Like for example, one of the posts that I posted today was, you know, Sony basically saying like, "Oh yeah, well cross-platform compatibility is not open because of this and this and this." Or even, you know, like if I felt like I had very strong emotional ties to something, like for example, when I fucking mentioned Corey Barlog like five fucking times times that he had no choice but to like what I had to say about him, like on Twitter today.
Fuck.
Which is probably why he replied that with that heart. Oh my god, I feel like a goddamn teenage stalker.
Was
Anthony.
He being sarcastic?
No, I don't know. It's just a fucking heart, dude. I don't know what that means.
The heart could be numerous things on the internet.
I know, but he liked every single thing that I fucking posted. I don't know how to feel about that. Yeah, it's his fucking personal account, so I don't know. Anyway, so I mean, going back to the point though, I mean the whole, but you know, like that's kind of a personal side of me that I'm kind of starting to show a lot more on the Twitter account, because formerly the Twitter account was just going to be all about the podcast, and I was like, you know, that's kind of bland. That's kind of bland. Well, there needs to be more.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. You're right, and you've changed a lot. Well, and you know what? Let me give Anonymous a little bit of information about you, if you don't mind.
Sure.
You used to even be like that with games when I first met you. You used to buy games that you weren't exactly into.
Mm-hmm.
Like, remember, we played ODST together, and you weren't a big Halo fan.
Mm-hmm.
Remember?
Yeah.
Yeah, you used to buy Halo games, used to buy games that you just didn't care about.
Mm-hmm.
For some reason, so you could get it a better. But your argument back then was because you were starting a gaming website, you should play everything you can.
Yeah. I personally, and this is just a very personal kind of viewpoint on games, right? And I feel like even, you know, sometimes, you know, for at the beginning of my relationship with my girlfriend, she kind of struggled with it a little bit as well, because when we started dating, I had a shit ton more games than I do now. Now I still have a lot of games. Right. But the way that I see my games is that they're not just my backlog, but it's an opportunity for me to be able to see and curate, actually, kind of like a museum, like what games actually made some sort of impact on me, whether it's negative or positive. Right. And by negative, I don't even mean like social, political issues or anything of that sort. It's just more like, well, this had a good element that this game had. And, you know, let's see how this evolved over the past several years kind of situation. Right. It's what allows me to be able to go back and say, like, you know, here's a good example, Anthony. When I got excited about Beyond Good and Evil 2, my girlfriend has never even heard of the game. So the kind of concession that we arrived to was, well, let me try to finish the first one to show you why this is such an important game, why a lot of people are really excited. Yeah, so you see, because it exists in my library, I can actually physically, literally pull it off of the library, put it in my PlayStation, and be like, well, this is what this game is, you know?
Are you talking about the original PS2 version?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay. I was talking because I have the HD remake.
Yeah, I'm talking about the original PS2 version.
I gotcha.
Fucking progressive scan, dude. 480p PS2, baby.
Damn. Damn.
So yeah, there's that. But, you know, kind of going back to your question, I mean, I think sometimes the news can be a bit too much. But again, I struggle with this every single day because I do love the stuff that I read, and it's not just and you have to understand, it's not just reading. I'm not just retweeting these. I do read these, all of these articles, and I'm not going to retweet stupid news like, hey, Call of Duty's, you know, release date is so-and-so and so, and just that, right? Like, you know, like clickbaity stuff like that. Like,
we really don't care about Call of Duty on the show much anymore.
Well, in general, like a release date for something, right? If it's just a press release about a release date, who the fuck cares? Like, I can just do a tweet like that or something. Sometimes, though, like, I'll tweet something that I'm on a game that I'm not interested in, but maybe somebody who follows me is interested in, right? Or, you know, like, to show you genuine turning around of interest. A good example is the Rabbids game, right? Like, I tweeted a lot about that yesterday because I really genuinely was floored when, you know, oh yeah, this game is actually an XCOM game, but not XCOM. It's like, what? You know, so in real time, it's almost like a live feed of my personal reactions for a lot of things. Now, over time, it's going to be less of that way because we're in such a condensed time frame, right? Like, it's E3. Now, I don't remember when I got this email. It's probably, like, about a month or so ago. But, you know, but the point, the fact of the matter is, like, checking out video game news is kind of, like, ingrained into me. Like, I can't stop doing that. But again, you know, in terms of approachability, I talk to a lot of people. And if people like some of the things that you know, I post, I talk to them and try to ask them, like, yeah, so what did you think of that news and stuff? And, you know, thankfully lately, a lot more people are more receptive to create conversation. And it's actually the word conversation is such an important thing for me and Anthony that that's why we decided to make that Facebook group, right? And that's why the Backlog Battle Podcast community, you know, Facebook group exists because of that very reason. Because we feel that, you know, we need one more outlet. Like, we have the PlayStation community, which unfortunately not a lot of people are posting anymore. But we wished a lot more people were posting there. But
we'll still keep it alive.
Yeah, we'll still keep it awake. But in terms of like, you know, like other stuff, like, you know, actual conversations about games, I feel like the Facebook group has actually slowly really morphed into that place where we can all talk about games, regardless of when it was released or whatnot, you know? And
yeah.
And I'll use this to close. There have been many people who, you know, who I've talked to, like, you know, like there's Rick and Chris and all those guys are really fucking awesome listeners of the podcast who, you know, have kind of opened my eyes and kind of made me check out older games, right? Like, I think Rick was saying that he was playing Vanquish and stuff. And I was like, all right, well, I have Vanquish. I should probably check that out again. So I did, right? And, you know, and that's, and I feel like I love that.
By the way,
Vanquish, I have to be in the mood. It's, remember when I told you that I have to be in the mood to play like a bro shooter? It has to be, I have to be in the mood to play that. But it's a great game. It plays good.
Okay.
But I can't, I'm not in that mood right now to play that game. We'll talk probably more about that next week. But yeah, so the bottom line is, like, you know, I love learning from people. And Anthony is a scholar in that sense too. He loves learning with people.
Mm-hmm.
And that Facebook group is the perfect place for us to learn from you, just as, you know, you've learned from us, like listening to the show. So,
yep.
Yeah, that's a long-winded answer.
I like anonymous. Challenge us. I'm not being an asshole. Just do it.
Yeah. Don't
These
be shy.
Are very challenging questions for Alex and I.
I know. It's very refreshing.
it really like, is. What do you think of the new Zelda game, Alex? Mm-hmm. What do you think of the new Nintendo? No, it's like, dude, you're an abrasive jackass. Not your exact words, but
yeah.
And Alex, you tweet too much fucking news. No, right. I'm not making fun of him though. I'm just saying I like being challenged.
Yeah, and again, like, you know, it kind of like along the same lines. You know, like, you know, send us these kinds of questions. It's podcast@mybacklogbattle.tv. I know I say like we have a lot of questions and stuff, but we play the order very fast and loose here. And, you know, if we haven't gotten to your question yet, I do apologize. We will get to that in a future episode, but, you know, we have to sift through quite a bit of it like now, which is kind of crazy that, you know, I guess we're doing something right if we're getting a lot of questions.
I hope so.
Yeah. So, at any rate, before we go, I do want to say, and I do want to reiterate, though, that even though we have mybacklogbattle.tv, and we do very much thank you for actually, like, helping us, you know, with this website. We couldn't have done it without you. We do still need your help. Like, you know, paying for it one time is not going to keep it alive. So in order for us to be able to keep it for another year and more years after that, we would want your help again. So, we want to remind you that on mybacklogbattle.tv, if you go to the website, on the right side, there are two things that you can do. One is you can donate and, you know, any amount that you wish for us so that we can kind of, you know, keep the hosting going and stuff. We prepaid for 1 year, so we should be good, but we don't have enough for the next year. I'll be honest with that. That's one way, the donation button on the website. The other one is the Amazon link, which I feel like it's fair. There's a lot of these games that we mentioned that if you're an Amazon Prime member, you're going to get, instead of $59.99, $47.99, which is, I think, a great deal. I know we're kind of shilling, but this is how we're able to not only get the Facebook group up, but also ensure that the website is up with all. By you, we have more than 220 episodes of the show,
from the other podcasts.
Yes, exactly. And we couldn't have done that without you guys. So if you guys want this to continue, if you guys want the party to continue, please help us out. Please consider helping us out.
And that's over close to 400, 500 hours of us talking about video games.
Jesus Christ. Yeah, tell me about it. And and we want to deliver so much more in the future. We have some plans, but we want to make sure that the community is well served and you guys are taken care of as well, in addition to the future of the podcast. So, but thank you very much for joining us. This has been a fantastic episode for, you know, for E3. I hope that next year we're able to actually get some of your opinions like on here as well, like in, for next year's E3. But until then, email us. Tell us what you thought about this year's E3 and all that good stuff. And we'll see you guys later. Happy gaming.
Thanks for listening to the Backlog Battle Podcast. Don't forget to email us at podcast@mybacklogbattle.tv if you've got any questions, comments, or suggestions from today's show. You can find Anthony on Twitter at twitter.com/magusx1 and on YouTube at youtube.com/magusx1. You can find me on Twitter at twitter.com/mybacklogbattle or on Facebook at facebook.com/mybacklogbattle. The intro and outro song is credited to Laszlo and is titled Imaginary Friends. It is available everywhere where music is sold. On behalf of Anthony, this is Alex saying take care and enjoy your week.